less than an hour, aircraft from here will join others from around the world. And you will be launching the largest aerial battle in the history of mankind. Mankind, that word should have new meaning for all of us today. We can't be consumed by our petty differences anymore.
I have a Barbara Billingsley translating the jive thing, but again, I got to wait for you to see it because it's only going to be funny to me and probably to Tim and to everybody else in the audience. But it's got to be funny to you or it's not worth playing. So if it doesn't amuse all of us here in the studio, then why do it? So Aaron excerpted out the stewardess. Pardon me, I speak jive. If you're thinking about it, makes me laugh. Anyway. So is that the deal that every day I don't have a movie speech prepared, I'm just going to get various iterations of Bill Pullman is standing on top of a pile of rubble shouting about something?
I think I'm going to go to CD Game Exchange today and buy that movie.
Yeah, you do that. You do that right now. Don't let another day pass.
You know, 2 out of 3 people in this room love Independence Day, Rick Emerson.
2 out of 3 radio hosts agree. All right. Fantastic. You know, my friend Ken DeRoche, you know, that is his go-to film for demonstrating his home theater system, though. That's the movie he uses. For me, it's Tombstone. I know a lot of guys use Terminator 2. For him, though, somebody comes over because he had the huge high-definition television, the Matt Peterson size. It's actually the size of Matt Peterson. It is 500 inches across. I'm sorry. That was a low blow. That was too much. I'm better than that. But in here, he's got a subwoofer and like 16 speakers. And if you go over to his house, that's what he does. If you want to check out my system, hold on a second. And he reaches right for the ID4. Puts it right inside. Hey, speaking of things ending in 4, I'm going to see, lucky me, I'm going to be seeing Die Hard 4 tonight. Woohoo! As Jim Roop would say. I'm filled with excitement. I'm not that excited. We'll talk more about that. It's 503-733-2970. That is the phone number for this, the Rick Emerson Show, which is starting now at 5 minutes and 48 seconds after the hour of 11 in this, the month of June of the year of our Lord, 2007. Thank you for coming along and making it part of your listening day. We are live from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of AM 970 Solid State Radio. It is Tuesday, and welcome to day 12. We haven't even started the program yet. By about 10:30, I think we had already amassed enough news to last us 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 shows. So we will talk more about that. There has been so much activity, and I don't just mean news activity. I mean, literally, there have been so many things that have happened in the studio over the last 25 minutes, many of them involving Scotty. Hi, Scotty. How are you?
Good.
No, don't go anywhere. You just stay here for a second. We'll talk to you here in just a moment, Scotty.
Grab the mic, Scotty.
All right. It's 503-733-2970. Do I need to... is this call screening software working right now?
Yes. Reset it.
What does that mean? Do you mean turn it off and start it again?
Turn it back on.
All right. Hold on. We've had some network issues, as they say. Some of our software was down this morning. Every time I say down, today. I want to say it like Arnold Schwarzenegger. Down! It's 503-733-2970 with your comments, clarifications, your conventions, your 2 cents, your what have you. If you would like to email us today, it's rick@rickemerson.com. rick@rickemerson.com. You can also email the rest of the cast and crew. It is sarah@970.am, tim@970.am, or scottyj@970.am. All right, because we really, honestly, seriously, have to stay on schedule today. We can't get behind for even a moment, or else we will just be run over by the roller-coasting freight train of news that is today. Real quickly, Lisa Goddard's going to be coming up at the bottom of the hour. We're going to talk. Do you have that audio? And if not, Tim, I do. Of George Bush admitting that the immigration bill is amnesty. Do you have that?
I will look for it.
I have it. No, you don't have to look for it, my friend. I've done the work for you.
Well, thank you.
Because Rick Emerson cares. He has put his nose to the grindstone, his shoulder to the wheel, his ear to the ground, his thing to the thing. And I have that audio of George Bush. He had a press conference this morning. And he said, well, amnesty is blah, 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 which is what this bill is. And, man, you could... As soon as the words left his mouth, you could hear the hamster-like scrabbling of all his minions in the back trying to put together some statement to insist that he really didn't just say that the bill is amnesty, which it clearly is. So we'll talk to Lisa Goddard about that. What else? I was going to talk to her about some crap the other day, and it completely escaped me. What was it? Oh, she went to see Rush on Friday. She was going to see the band Rush over the weekend, and she'd never seen them before, nor had she ever experienced the peculiar uniqueness that is the Rush fan base, many of whom look like Engineer Will, who was in here just a few minutes ago. So we'll talk to Lisa Goddard about that. God, not to be a big buzzkill, Amanda Moyer is going to be on later to talk about this hideous Chris Benoit thing, the WWE wrestler who I have a friend of mine who's a huge wrestling fan. The guy that is a massive fan of pro wrestling, even though, you know, he's my age, but still is very into it. And I sent him a text this morning. It was real brief. It said, hey, sorry about your man, Chris Benoit, you know, and it's ugly and getting uglier by the moment. Oh. And then I just signed off the text by saying, life blows. And it does indeed. So we will discover the various ways in which life blows, especially if you are the family of Chris Benoit, former WWE wrestler, later on this hour. So that's icky. Jim Roop's going to be with us to talk about Paris Hilton. We got more Paris Hilton talk here in just a second. What else? We may or may not be talking, probably not today, but we have that guy from North Dakota whose ex-wife has moved in with this guy's own parents. So at some point, we got to figure out a time to talk to him because he wants us to solve his problems. And if the Rick Emerson Show is good at one thing, my friends, it is solving the personal problems of people who are in no way related to the program. What else? Top five today. These phone calls, so forth. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. You can also email. It's rick@rickemerson.com. Oh, and the Michigan Potato Queen has had her crown taken away. It's been and not just that. She's not just from Michigan. She is, in fact, from Munger, Michigan. I don't even know where that is. It's just funny enough to make it into a story. There's like five great things in that headline alone. Munger Potato Queen has crown stolen. What else? Well, that's it. And we got some Harry Potter news today. Big Harry Potter news, actually. Which may or may not be related to this Harry Potter article that's right there in the arts section of the New York Times. So we'll talk about that. All right. Let's go around the room here. We're joined today, as we always are, by the lovely and talented Sarah X. Dillon. Why, hello, and how are you today?
My shower didn't turn on last night, so I'm doing very well.
Let me just say this. Now, we talked about this in the latter part of yesterday's program, that yesterday morning, and I mean early yesterday morning, like 2 a.m.,
yeah,
you woke up in the middle of the night to find that your shower had turned on without your knowledge. You have no idea how it got turned on. You were alone in the house, and it had been running for so long that your bathtub was about to overflow.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So now all of the response to this has boiled down into there's one of three categories that all responses to your shower turning on seemingly by itself fall into. A, you were sleepwalking.
That's what I believe.
And did it by yourself. B, and the B is really just a subset of A. B is that you were in a drunken stupor / blackout and did it yourself while careening in an intoxicated state around the house. Or C, that your home was built on some kind of era Indian burial ground.
Yeah, so I was talking to Raul about that yesterday, and he told me when I was out of town, because he stayed at my house when I was out of town and took care of my dog. And I was telling him about it, he's like, yeah, your house is haunted.
Is this going to be disturbing?
No.
Does he have any anecdotal evidence?
No, he said that he kept getting woken up in the middle of the night. He heard someone saying his name in his ear.
Like he would try to sleep? That he was alone in your house?
He was alone in my house. He's like,
Raul!
There
would be a voice that just screamed into his ear while he was sleeping.
Yeah, you would hear his name.
Oh, yeah.
You'd hear like, Raul! And he'd wake up and he said he would hear someone yell in his
creepy.
I'm like, great. He's like, but I don't get any bad feelings from him. I'm like, oh, okay.
Sure. No, it's a helpful voice screaming his name into his ear as he tries to sleep in your house.
I think that I just sleptwalked and I thought that I heard a noise and maybe I thought it was my alarm clock and I got up to take a shower and then...
Wait a minute. You don't live on... You don't live on that section of Southeast, do you? You don't live on that... I was going to do the whole Nightmare on Elm Street thing about Freddy Krueger's mother. You know the whole... Do you know the backstory of Freddy Krueger?
No.
Oh, it's the creepiest thing ever. It's so creepy. It's radio safe, I suppose, except it's just incredibly disturbing. The backstory of Freddy Krueger is actually one of the most horrific... It's one of the most fascinating, perverse backstories of any character.
Ooh, tell.
But it really has nothing to do with your haunted shower, and it really would just be a deviation from the program today for no real reason. Let me write it down.
I kind of want to investigate and see if anything ever happened in my building.
Well, you know,
but I don't know how to go about doing that.
Oh, well, I think we both know the answer to that. Every email I got yesterday also ended with the phrase, Clyde Lewis should totally investigate Sarah's house, because that's what you want is Clyde and his band of lunatics tromping through your underwear drawer. Clyde and a bunch of unshaven, unwashed paranormal investigators who reek of cheese whiz coming through your house. I'm here to... Where's my spectrograph? Do you have a microwave so I can cook up these steakums? Tim Riley's working on the following stories for your edification today, kids.
All right, there's a lot to talk about. First, two dead bodies are found floating in the Willamette near Lake Oswego. Pro wrestler Chris Benoit strangled his wife and smothered his son before hanging himself, according to the cops. Paris Hilton thinks the prison sidewalk is a catwalk, sashaying back and forth on the way out this morning. A Salem man leads police at a high-speed chase wearing only his underwear. An investigated man tumbles 200 feet down the cliff.
Excellent. Well done. All of that plus, we'll talk to Jim Rubin with Lisa Goddard. Amanda Moyer's going to talk to us about Chris Benoit. We'll get these phone calls. Let's do that first, actually. Well, somebody's been in here using my computer because my things are old.
That happens to me all the time.
You know, my things are all askew. Let's take these calls, and then we'll talk to Scotty J. Hi, Rick Emerson Show.
Rick.
Who is this?
This is George.
Hi. I don't have your sounder. Blah, 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 homosexuals.
Blah, blah, blah. Hey, blah, listen, there's a man that needs your humor, Rick, since I have none of my own.
Okay.
There's a man being executed tonight in Texas who wants to go out with a one-liner, and he's asking for donations from the general public.
That can't be a real story.
No, it's true. It's on the Guardian UK. I just sent it to you in your email. Check your inbox.
He's being executed in Texas.
And he wants to go out with a one-liner. So
he wants the public to come up with a joke for him?
Yeah, because he wants to say, you know, he wants to have a little levity. He wants to lighten things up. And so he said, so far, his best bet is... if you ever needed a body double, now is the time.
How are they executing him?
Injection, Texas. I don't know. Maybe with rock.
All right, hold on. I'm reading this right here. Boy, do you ever know how to find the right stories for this show?
Yes, sir.
A man sentenced to be executed tonight in Texas is determined to have the last laugh. Whatever the local sheriff who caught him and relatives of his victims may think. Patrick Knight is due to die by lethal injection for the 1991 murder of two neighbors. But rather than appealing for forgiveness and mercy, he says he is appealing for jokes. So far, Knight has received 250 wisecracks via a website set up his friend entitled Dead Man Laughing.
I think we're worthy of that task.
I gotta say, he intends to read the best joke in his final statement before his execution. That's fantastic. It really is. I know it's wrong to kill. I understand that. Murder isn't right. Find another way to resolve your issues. This is great, though. I love guys who get executed and go out with a little style.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Like Gary Gilmore.
When he said, even he's the one who just said, let's do it.
Yeah, let's do it. So yeah. I'm done, so I'm out of here.
Right. Excellent. Thank you.
Bye.
Go out like a cowboy. That's fantastic. All right. If you have a great joke, a one-liner that this condemned inmate, dead man laughing, can tell before he's executed, I can pass that along to us, I guess. That's great. All right. Let's get this other call, and then we'll address what happened in the studio right before the show. Hi, Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hello. You are the bastard son of 100 maniacs.
Thank you. Thanks for... That's the Freddy Krueger thing.
Yeah. Hey, I had an idea for a running bit, and it's not going to be presented really well, but I wanted to lay it out to you.
An idea for a running bit.
Well, just topic, whatever.
Okay.
I'm really confused about when people talk about, like, A-list celebrities, B-list celebrities, and such. And I want to know, is, like, Minnie Driver, for example, an A-list celebrity or B-list celebrity? And if she's a B-list celebrity, what does that make someone like, you know what I'm talking about?
No, this is great. This is a great idea for a topic. I've just written it, and I mean that sincerely. What is your name, sir?
Steve.
Steve, I have just written this down. I have written this down so you will get proper credit for it. That's a great idea for a topic.
I appreciate that because it just seems like I, from my own personal sense, I need to be recalibrated.
I could. You need a benchmark. You need a baseline.
Yes.
You need a sort of a basal reading of this. That's like a 90-minute topic. I do a whole day on that.
Or just, a couple minutes a day or what have you.
Fantastic.
Hey, can I tell you one last thing?
Yes, sir.
Because I've never done this. Sarah.
Yes.
You're awesome.
Oh, thank you.
No, and you should write down the date and time of your little incident the other night, frame it, put it on the wall in your bathroom, so maybe it won't happen again until the exact time next year.
Okay.
All right.
Okay,
keep a log of these activities. Thank you, sir.
Bye.
All right, there you go. I swear to God, I felt like a hot as balls coming there. All right, that's a great idea, topic-wise. Okay, just real quick, he did give the Freddy Krueger backstory. Here's the backstory on Freddy Krueger, villain and anti-hero of the Nightmare on Elm Street series. I apologize in advance. This is horrific. But so Freddy Krueger was born to a nun. And the deal about Freddy Krueger is he was born to a nun who was impregnated. This is according to Wes Craven, the official Nightmare on Elm Street lore. Freddy Krueger was born to a nun who was impregnated when she was, wait for it, accidentally left behind for the weekend in an asylum for the criminally insane.
Yeah.
With like a thousand guys who all look like the Joker and have hooks for hands. Like, as Kenny Rogers would say, Count of the County, they took turns at her. And then blah, 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 I'm pregnant, blah, 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 Freddy Krueger. Da, 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 knives, blah, 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 1-2 coming for you. So there you go. Backstory on Freddy Krueger. All right. I'm not going to take this other call right now because we have to talk to Scotty. Okay, so here's what happens. You have to know, we joke about having a webcam in here sometimes or about just filming everything that goes on in the studio. Never have I longed more for some sort of just a constant running camera, like, Richard Nixon style, in the corner of the room, just taping all the action than this morning. So we're in kind of a dimly lit studio here, which is fine. It's okay. I don't really mind it. But we don't have fluorescent lighting. A lot of radio studios will have incandescent lighting, light bulbs, and then they'll have fluorescent lighting recessed in the ceiling. We don't have any fluorescent lighting. We have a pretty big studio. It's a pretty big, spacious studio, lots of black, everything is in dark colors, big black curtains in the back, dark carpet, dark walls, and we have five smallish light bulbs that light the entire studio. And they don't light it that much. The studio is just bright enough to work, but it's sort of dim enough to have a cool ambiance. But, of course, the upshot of that is, if you lose even one light bulb, if even one of the bulbs in the studio burns out, then it becomes difficult to work. It becomes sort of untenably dim. So I come in this morning, and the light directly above my computer has burned out sometime during the night. Because, the lights get left on pretty much all the time. So I come in today, the light bulb above my computer is burnt out. I say, hey, well, that sucks. The light's burnt out. It's going to be real difficult to do the show because I might not be able to read anything. Can we track down one of the engineers? We leave a message for the engineers, but, of course, they're doing a lot of other work today. The engineer doesn't get back to us right away, can't be found. Scotty comes in. Scotty says, hey, what's up with the studio? I say, well, yeah, this light bulb above my computer burned out. Scotty then says, feel free to jump in at any time. Scotty then says, why don't I just take this light bulb from above Sarah and move it over to your light, Rick? And so, so that was your idea, right? Scotty's genius idea is he's going to take the light bulb out of the light above Sarah and move it over to where I'm working. Now, we all immediately weigh in and tell Scotty this is a bad idea. Because the lights in here, they're not just like a normal light you would have in your office. They're like these weird radio station track lights, and the bulbs are bolted in by these additional clamps. And, there's all of this strange wiring. I mean, they're like heavy-duty, like, industrial lights. They're very mystifying. I don't know how the bulbs go in. I don't know how the bulbs come out.
They're kind of warm, too.
They seem... Yeah, and that's the other thing, is they've been burnt. The lights have been on.
Since we moved into the studio.
The bulbs have got to be like 1,000 degrees to the touch. Scotty, well, I'm just going to take care of that. I'll take this bulb right out from above Sarah and move it over to where you are. And Sarah and I are both like, no, why don't you just... Scotty, no, why don't you wait for the engineer? Scotty, no, just... It's Scotty, please, just... No, the engineer will do... It's fine. Scotty, of course, just won't be dissuaded.
I'm a can-do guy.
No, that was it. But you're not. You're a can't-do guy.
I look like one.
You are the definition of an American.
He's a can-break guy.
Yes, that's exactly what he is.
Followed by a bunch of sorries, you know.
Can-do badly guy. But the thing is, you just wouldn't be dissuaded. So picture a studio that is already very unreasonably dim because the light bulb above me has burned out. Scotty, despite Sarah and I scream for him not to do it, reaches in to the light right above Sarah's computer and begins unscrewing the light bulb, which is held in there by a bunch of mysterious bolts. I don't know what you did or what you touched, but the next thing we saw was a huge arc of electricity coming out of the light, and then I swear to God, like a sizzling, burning, snapping sound, like sort of a, like in the movies when a guy accidentally touches one of those things in Frankenstein's lab, and there's like a, and you can see a skeleton. That's exactly what happened. You're unscrewing the light bulb, and it just arcs and sizzles and burns. There's a smell of burnt sulfur in the air, and we just see sparks coming out of the light bulb in a studio which is made entirely of old dried wood and fabric, by the way.
Yeah, it's just like Caddyshack.
And then the light burns out. Then the light above Sarah just goes out and is left dangling there, halfway out, just screaming to create a fire hazard for the studio.
So, I immediately thought of Caddyshack, where that guy's golfing in the rain and he sticks his umbrella up and
exactly
gets hit by a bolt of lightning. It's the best day of my life.
That's exactly what it was. And as a side benefit, it plunged the studio even deeper into darkness. Sam had summed the entire thing up, by the way, when he came into the studio. And he said, "Is it even darker in here?" And I said, "Yes, it is." He said, "Why?" And I said, Scotty ignored our request that he not try to fix things, and he burned out Sarah's light bulb, and Tim just said, "So Scotty tried to help, but really made things just a little bit worse, didn't he?" And I said, "Yes."
I've never seen a light bulb melt
like that. Not
glass.
That was the other great thing, by the way, is then as you insisted on trying to remove the light bulb, which you then had burned out, it broke off in your hand or something. And so you're just leaving this socket inside, which is just begging for a finger to accidentally be put inside, like, you know, for some kind of inadvertent workplace electrocution. So thanks for that.
Sorry.
What was your explanation?
I'm an electrician, Rick.
I've changed a lot of light bulbs.
I've worked with a lot of electricity in my life. Well done.
I've been shocked a couple times.
Yeah. Thanks so much. All right. Thank you, Scotty.
All right.
I'll get this call, and then we got to break here in a second. Hi, Rick Emerson Show.
Hey, Rick, I've got a joke that has just recently come back into fashion.
Yeah, is this for the execution guy?
Absolutely.
All right.
Did you hear that Salman Rushdie has written a new book?
Is this going to be an insensitive joke, sir?
A little bit, but not so that you have to put me on hold and let me think about it.
Okay, go ahead.
His new book is called Buddha, You Fat Son of a Bitch.
Okay, that is funny. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Bye now. All right. So there you go. It's 503-733-2970. We should probably break here. We got Lisa Goddard coming up at the bottom of the hour. Amanda Moyer about WWE wrestler Chris Benoit coming up at 11:45. Later on, Jim Roop about Paris Hilton. Tim Riley working on stories for the noon news hour. We have the top five on the way. Dennis Pitsenbarger later on today. Your phone calls, etc. You stay there. It's the Rick Emerson Show on AM 970 Solid State. Emerson Radio Program. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. Coming up in about 10, 12 minutes, we'll talk to CNN Radio correspondent Amanda Moyer about Chris Benoit. Later on, CNN Radio correspondent James Roop about Paris Hilton. Lots of other stuff to get to. Oh, and I got to talk about this Harry Potter thing here in a second. Well, here's, real briefly, here's the broad strokes. So, let's see. I made a note to myself here. Why did I write down Transformers? Oh, yeah, because tomorrow, 6:30 tomorrow, just as a side note, if you are interested in Transformers, I am not, but if you are one of those people, and there does seem to be many of them, the movie is tracking huge, as they say in Hollywood, if you're interested in Transformers, now there's going to be, because I think the premiere actually happens, what is it, tomorrow? Or is it next, is it the Wednesday after that? Something. We're going to be hosting some red carpet web premiered thing, whatever, on the station website. There's going to be a camera pointed at some guy going, "Now the Transformers film." And then if you care about it, it'll be exciting. And then something will happen. I don't know. It doesn't matter to me. Here's what matters to me is that, A, tonight I'm seeing Die Hard 4, which is going to be awful, but I'm not paying for it.
And normally, I don't like to see movies with any sort of a screening or preview crap because they're just a bunch of drunken animals. But it doesn't matter tonight because the movie's going to be terrible anyway. And I'll be there to witness the suck firsthand. So I can then try to discourage the movie's growth through word of mouth and try to get everybody not to see it. Also, well, I don't even have time to talk about the Harry Potter thing here. Well, let's do this. Let's welcome down to the Rick Emerson Show from the hills. CNN Radio correspondent to the stars, Lisa Goddard. Why, hello there, and how are you today?
Hey, guys.
Hey, what's up with you? How are things?
Things, you know, up and down, craziness, immigration, coming back to life, perhaps. We'll see.
Let me just, real quickly, before we do anything else, let me ask you this. Are you a Harry Potter fan?
Yes.
All right. So that gives me then an excuse to finish this thought. So... There is the Transformers webcast premiere red carpet thing. I had something from that CBS Digital group that's always spamming Tim. So that's going to be on our website. And then tonight I'll be seeing Die Hard 4 with Aaron Geek and the City Duran. But then this. So I got this email today that purportedly in a couple different cities around the country, including Portland, tomorrow is a secret premiere of Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix. Now, I've been able to confirm that that's true or not, but allegedly it's right here in Portland tomorrow night at 7:30 p.m. And so, Sarah, have you gotten a thing about that?
No, I have
not. I'll forward it to you if you want. It does look. Because it's like a viral... it's a thing... I don't even know if I want to say where it's from, but it's a thing from MySpace. And it is... It's one of those profiles that, like, you would never get to by accident. It's like a thing that you had to be invited to. And it's sort of like, this profile is your pass to an advanced screen. It looks very official, though. Didn't look like anything that was hacked together just to screw with people. It did look like a legitimate advanced screening. So I'll send that to you.
Okay, cool.
So there may be an advanced screening of Harry Potter here, which is very exciting to us. There was an advanced screening of the Simpsons movie here, I don't know, about 2, 3, 4 months ago, and then nobody found out about it until after the fact. So things are happening, Lisa. That's the point.
Wow.
It's a good time to be inside the whirling dervish of Portland pop culture.
When is it a bad time, Rick?
Really, it's not. Two things. Well, one, let's talk about immigration. Did you hear, and I'm sure you did, George W. Bush refer to the bill as amnesty today?
I did not actually hear that.
Well, who wants to hear that audio? Raise your hand.
Me.
All right. Here's George W. Bush. In a statement that Tony Snow, even, I was noting earlier, even as George W. Bush said these words today, you could hear all of the press flack that worked for the White House scrabbling around like rodents inside a habit trail, trying to put together some press statements to say that George Bush did not just say what he clearly just said. So this is George W. Bush referring to this immigration bill this morning.
You know, I
Are you able to hear that?
Yes.
You know, I've heard all the rhetoric, you know, you've heard it too, about how this is amnesty. Amnesty means that you've got to pay, you know, a price for having been here illegally, and this bill does that.
Oh, let's hear that one more time, shall we?
Amnesty means that you've got to pay, you know, a price for having been here illegally, and this bill does that.
So, there you go.
Okay, so it sounds like what happened, though, is he did the classic George Bush... put up in his own logic there.
Yes.
Amnesty does not mean paying a price. Amnesty means not paying a price.
Well,
that's where he got tangled up.
And so, how great is it that you have the classic George Bush way to introduce something? B, how great is it that you use the phrase caught up in his own logic? And C, I mean, so is it that he just doesn't understand what the word means? Is it that he understands what the word means and thinks this is that? Or is it that, or is it just like a Freudian thing? Like, is that, does he in his heart just believe that this, that that's what this is, and that just sort of slipped out when he didn't intend for it to?
I think that he has now come to believe that he is probably really good on the fly in public, because sometimes he is. Sometimes he really is great in a press conference, and everyone just sits back and says, whoa, like, where did this come from? And he really probably doesn't get enough credit for being good in person. But I think the problem is when he starts... not thinking through and taking his time, I think he gets a little overconfident, and that's what happened there. He wanted to get to the point to say, this bill is an amnesty, and suddenly he defined amnesty wrong, and then he wasn't really paying attention to what he was saying.
He is...
That's my intro. That sounds like what happened right there.
He is the very definition of a guy just getting his feet tangled up in some sort of, you know, he just gets himself tangled inside a big ball of yarn. It's like George W. Bush, and I say this, there's no partisanship here. This is simply an observation on his rather colorful and unique use of the English language. That it seems like when he gets knee-deep into something like that, he really is just fighting the taffy monster. You know what I mean? it's just like the more he tries to extricate himself from some sort of linguistic quicksand, it's just the further down into it he sinks. And it just he suddenly, and then you can tell, he gets that look in his eyes where he, and I read this look as the, he is completely and totally off the page. He has gone off the beaten path. He is in the tall grass. He is in the weeds.
Right.
And sees no way out of it. And I can only imagine the kind of panic that ensues off stage at those moments. Because if I can spot that look, I mean, bet your bottom dollar the guys have been working with him for, you know, 8 to 7 years. They can spot that look. And that's when they probably just backstage just immediately start making the text on the teleprompter all huge. It just, you know, start underlining things in red on the teleprompter screen, desperately trying to get him back on the point. So, all right. So where are we? What is the latest on this non-amnesty immigration bill then?
Right. Well, okay, here's the deal. Immigration bill, back resurrected. Gene Wilder-like, back on the Senate floor, it made it through a critical, you know, people call it a test vote. Essentially, it needed 60 votes in order to come back for consideration, and it got 64. But the problem is, it's not clear that all of how many of those votes will support passage of the bill. Those are the number of votes that support bringing it back up. What will happen now is we'll get into the sticky trenches with the Republicans and Democrats. Each have 11 amendments. It's a little more complicated than that, but that's kind of the bottom line. 11 chances right now to change this bill, and depending on how those amendments go, it could demolish the immigration bill, utterly change it. It's very hard to say. But what's interesting is even as the Senate tries its best to get this immigration bill out the door, House Republicans are already coming out and saying that bill is dead the minute it comes over here. But the funny thing is they don't really know what the bill is going to look like because a lot could happen before the end of this week. It's very hard to say.
So when the Republicans say things like that, when they just say, look, we're just going to smite it as soon as it comes our way, is it just, so if it's not about the content of the bill, is it just on principle at this point that they just don't like it and it just smells bad to them and so they're just going to get it off the plate as soon as it comes over there regardless?
I think if it changed significantly, perhaps it's the whole idea of giving status to the 12 million illegal immigrants, however many you want to say there are. If you drop that whole section, then the Republicans would probably say, oh, it's a deferred bill. Maybe we'll support that. So it's hard to say. Really, one reason they came out and did that this morning, they did it ahead of this big Senate vote. They were trying to get more support, trying to really kill the bill in the Senate, give people kind of some political cover to vote against it, so that perhaps they could say, well, it's going to die in the House anyway, so I'm going to vote so that it doesn't come up in the Senate. Does it, you know, that makes sense?
Yeah.
Trying to,
yeah,
give some cover to Republicans over on the Senate side. Didn't happen. Senate Republicans, by and large, voted to let the bill come to the floor, and we're going to see the fireworks this week, potentially.
It's fantastic. It warms the cockles of my heart. It really does. I don't even really know what a cockle is, now that I think about it. A cockle is one of those words that you only hear in a certain context, and I realize now that outside of the cockles of my heart, one never talks about something warming the cockles of your foot. It really is just your heart. I don't even really know what that word means. Let me say this.
I think there's some old Irish song. It's got to be, isn't it? All right, go ahead. I was going to put a theory out here that
No, it's okay. Go ahead.
I feel like I associate it with the sea, right?
I have no way of disproving that, but I have no idea whether that has any basis in fact or not. That's one of those things that you could probably pass off as a fact to me or to the average person because no one really knows the answer. And so you can just, into that vacuum, you can thrust your completely unbased hypothesis.
Yes, it is. A cockle is, in fact, a type of muscle. And that is a bivalve mollusk of some sort, but I'm sure that's not the specific reference.
So it warms.
The cockle means a sort of wave or a wrinkle as well.
It warms the wrinkles of my heart.
Apparently.
Or as an alternative interpretation, it warms the mollusks of my heart.
One or the other, exactly.
All right. And real quickly, just two small things. One, do you know in what context? Have you heard this quote going around that I think it was Trent Lott who said it? That he said talk radio is running this country, and so we've got to do something about it.
Yes.
What, in what context was that said? You know, when and where was that? Did that come out of his mouth?
I think that was on the Senate floor, and it was in the context of the immigration debate, and saying that the talk radio has not, in Trent Lott's opinion, really given a fair shake to the bill, and all they do is keep screaming amnesty. And he was trying to make the case probably along the lines of what George Bush might have been trying to do this morning as well, that the bill is not amnesty, in his opinion, that the bill does have penalties in it for illegal immigrants, and that it really is punitive, that it's not just a free ride for them. And he was saying talk radio is doing a disservice by trying to cast it as, you know, this huge free pass for all illegal immigrants and just waving the bloody amnesty flag around. So that's why he's saying that talk radio is out of control.
You know, it's funny that I don't remember hearing any complaints from Trent Lott about the power of talk radio back in 1994. you know, when they were sweeping their way into Congress and Newt Gingrich was going to run the universe, I don't remember hearing any complaints from him about the power of the people behind the microphone. So
right, but you got to give it to him for putting that out there.
You've
got to be feeling, either he was feeling incredibly frustrated or he was feeling incredibly confident when he said that.
Final question. Was it this past weekend you went to see the band Rush in concert?
It was Saturday night.
So you went with Sporbert, who clearly like a dyed-in-the-wool Rush fan, but it was your first experience with that band. All right. Please to be explaining your impressions of the Rush audience.
You were dead on. It was a sea of dorkdom.
Yes.
I have never before seen a concert with as many and perhaps as antiquified concert T-shirts.
Totally.
From that same band. I almost feel like it's usually, at a lot of concerts, it's usually kind of uncool to, like, drive in listening to that same band that you're going
to
see.
Well, you're not supposed to go to the concert listening to the band, at least not listening to the new album, and you're not supposed to wear the concert shirt the next day. Those are
right.
The two rules. Yeah.
Right. And it's fun. But for every single tour that these guys have been on, which has probably been 60, you know, there must have been dozens of T-shirts from that one tour.
Yeah.
And it was almost like you almost could have divided the audience into what tour T-shirt they were wearing. It was pretty. And the other thing of the guy-girl ratio reminded me very heavily of the one time a friend convinced me to go to a comic book convention.
I was just going to say, and all of those shirts were on men, because at a Rush concert, and no women anywhere except those who have been dragged reluctantly along by their dorky boyfriends. No offense.
There were a couple of cute girls there for sure. But, you know, I have to say, overall, it was a great time. That band, I can't believe what they were getting done on that stage, considering, I mean, not to, you know, make age a big issue, but geez, I mean, those guys were rocking.
No, they're a fantastic band. They really are just unbelievably musically gifted. I mean, as far as being players, I mean, they're from some other planet. They really are not of this earth. Yeah.
I feel bad for the guitar player, because the drummer is just in a whole other galaxy, and so they've got this amazing guitar player, and Geddy Lee's pretty good, is amazing on the bass as well, but it almost is, it's so ridiculous, the level that their drummer, Neil Peart, is that right?
Yes, it is.
He's on just a Buddha level of drugs.
No, he is.
It was just freakish. It was amazing.
It's like he won everybody else's talent in a card game. I mean, that's kind of the deal. And by the way, I should say this. If I could keep you on the phone talking about Rush all day, I'd have like a 40 share by the end of the program, just so you know. All right. We will talk more about it in the future. For the meantime, in between time, thank you so much. Enjoy the rest of your day. We'll talk to you soon, Lisa.
All
thank
right,
you.
Great.
All right. There you go. CNN Radio correspondent to the stars, Lisa Goddard. Ladies and gentlemen, fantastic. I think I know what that sound is now. I think that's the sound of somebody else trying to call the guest line.
Oh!
Because we hear that every now and again, and it's usually when Kassenbaum is on the phone with us. But it just happened now, and I suspect that is the sound of someone else trying to use. Because we found out now that if you call the guest line when somebody's on it, doesn't ring busy. It rings and nobody answers. And so it's some weirdness with the phone company about that. I could have kept her on the phone talking about Rush, seriously, for the rest of this day. And, I mean, every single guy out there every guy who plays Warhammer, you know, every guy who's sitting at home doing something in Unix would have become P1s by the end of the day. All right. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show from the CNN Radio Center in Atlanta. Amanda Moyer. Hello, Amanda. How are you today?
Hello.
Hey, so I was text messaging a friend of mine this morning who's a guy about my age, big pro wrestling fan, just a guy who grew up with it, you know, still very into it as a fan and kind of just, you know, gets into it. And I sent him a text this morning about this hideous thing with Chris Benoit, and I said, hey, you know, I'm sorry about the whole Chris Benoit thing, because it's just ugly and uglier by the moment, and because let's get a little backstory. So this Chris Benoit was. And I grew up as a professional wrestling fan, you know, for some of my formative years. But I kind of I kind of lost track of that when I was in my early teens or whatever, so I kind of missed this guy's whole era. But he was a big deal, right? He was a former champion, and he had the belt or whatever. I mean, he was a big star.
Oh yeah, he was a former heavyweight champion, intercontinental champion, even held some other titles over his career. This guy was very popular. People are just really shocked by his death, and that his wife and son too, that they're both dead. And people were like, what happened? And they didn't really believe that it was a murder-suicide. It just took everyone by surprise.
And so but it came in waves. So the first thing I heard, this is late last night, was that, again, this guy Chris Benoit and his wife Nancy, who I believe used to wrestle. I think she just called herself Woman years ago, and she actually wrestled as well. And they were married, and they had a kid. I heard they were all dead. And then I heard, well, the police aren't looking outside the house for any suspects, meaning they think one of them did it. And now we've heard, and I don't know to what extent any of this has been confirmed either on or off the record, but now there's some new hideous wrinkle that Sarah, my producer, was telling me that they think now that someone close to the case, as they often say, is saying now that they think that this guy killed his wife one day and then like killed the kid the next day, and then himself. And is there any of this that's been confirmed, or is it all still up in the air?
Well, I spoke to someone off the record that is dealing directly with this case that said it was apparent that all three people died by strangulation, it looked like a murder-suicide, and that the mother and the boy died significantly before the wrestler, which, if you're not looking, that means that if he died before,
right,
he's basically saying that he did do it.
Right.
And they also confirmed that the little boy was found in an upstairs bedroom. The wife, Nancy, was found in a room that looked to be a family room. That's what the person told me. The AP is reporting it was an office. And Benoit was in his weight room.
And, I mean, was he known to have a drug problem, steroids, anything that would have, I mean, any history of anything that would have indicated that this was, like, looming in the future?
Well, they're looking into steroid use, and toxicology reports won't be out for weeks. But from what I'm gathering from people, that he didn't have a problem, people didn't think that something like this would happen. So it's all very shocking of why. And also, like the WWE, they're the ones that actually contacted the police to go check on Benoit and his family,
right,
after friends had alerted them that, you know, they got all these weird text messages Sunday morning. So it's just, like you said, layers and layers of just a very strange story that's been unfolding.
And then I guess we'll have more of this as it sort of rolls out. But it was, you know, it's just a weird position for the WWE to be in as well, because he canceled out on some appearance he was going to do the other day, and then they started to air this huge tribute to him, and now this whole hideousness comes out. So
yeah, I think he was supposed to do something in Houston, and then the USA Network held a couple hour tribute, and there was stuff all over the website this morning, like tributes, and people were like, stuff was posted about his career, and now it's not there.
Yeah.
So.
All right. Well, there's just no way to gild the lily on that. That just sucks.
No, I think we'll find out a little bit more as the day goes on, and the autopsy report is supposed to come out in a couple hours. And I think there's going to be a presser soon too.
All right, Amanda Moyer, CNM Radio Center in Atlanta. Thank you so much, Amanda.
Sure.
Thank you so much. There you go. All right. Well,
God, strangled. And strangling's a really intimate crime. You know, I mean, that's
totally
right in your face.
Totally.
That's not shooting someone. That's face to face.
Well, and I'm not a cop or anything, but you always hear that's the whole. If there's like the such a morbid conversation. You always hear there's the big three, Sarah. There's the, well, I guess four. There's the strangling, the shooting, the stabbing, and then there's the poisoning. And I think that they always say that as you get physically closer in terms of how you commit the crime, that it's like that up goes the odds that it's somebody you have an intimate relationship with. You know, like somebody, like if you poison somebody, that's just some, some guy. You know, if you shoot somebody, I mean, shooting is just, it's a very distant sort of thing. I mean, not that people don't shoot people they have intimate relationships with, but you're like, nobody's, very few people strangle a complete stranger, and they said fewer people stab a complete stranger. I mean, unless they just have no other way to do it and they're intent on killing whoever it is. That's a whole lot of, strangling's one of those, this is such a tricky conversation, I'm not trying to make it sound like one's better than the other, but, I mean, it seems like, I don't know, it seems like strangling is much, but there's lots of people who shoot each other for all kinds of reasons. There's people who shoot each other because of personal reasons. There's people who shoot each other because it's a you know, some guy cuts you off in traffic. There's shooting that happens over crimes or over drug deals or over some business arrangement that's gone bad or, you know, whatever. You just have it. You just woke up on the wrong side of the bed. But I don't think very many people strangle complete strangers. You know what I mean? Unless you are just completely crazed. I think strangling is very much the province of the nutty. They have all of, you know, those different kinds of killing that I mentioned. Again, not that there's any better way to go than any other way, but strangling indicates that it's either somebody you have some close relationship with or you're just flat out nutty. Or both. So, anyway. So that's hideous. All right. It kind of makes me glad, actually, that I was... Because I grew up as a pro wrestling fan, but I kind of gravitated away from it right around the time, I think, that this guy sort of rose to prominence. And I'm sort of glad about that, because it would just be too freaky otherwise. Scotty, should I be answering these calls? I'm looking at the... should I be taking whoever these... Well, we'll find out. Hi, Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, Rick.
Hey, what's up?
Hey, you were saying that you didn't know very much about Chris Benoit's career.
Yeah.
But I've followed wrestling ever since I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And Chris Benoit comes from the who's family of wrestling. He trained with the Hart.
With the Hart? Oh, yeah, right, okay. Bret the Hitman Hart. Yeah.
Yeah. And he's wrestled all over in New Japan, WCW. He's held multiple titles. Before he died, got on the internet last night and was doing some research, and he was supposed to work at a house show on Saturday, which he no-showed.
Right, yeah, because I guess he didn't show up, and it was like he said, well, I have personal reasons, and I won't be able to make it in or whatever, and yeah, he just,
yeah.
I don't know if that's the night when he killed everybody, but yeah.
Yeah, that's what, it was also supposed to show up at a pay-per-view on Sunday.
Right.
And they replaced him, and he was supposed to win another title that night.
Yeah, I'm trying to diminish the hugeness of the crime, because obviously, you know, it's a terrible thing to do. But I mean, just if you look at it from Vince McMahon's point of view, too, I mean, it'd suck off the charts for that guy, because Chris, correct me if I'm wrong, because Chris Benoit was one of those guys who was a franchise, right? I mean, there was just, a whole lot of merchandising and money and all kinds of crap that rode on that guy. And, you know, that's one of those things where they go through all the archives and they very carefully Photoshop you out of all the photos. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and to show you how huge this is to the WWE, they had a storyline going where Vince McMahon, his character, Mr. McMahon,
right,
was blown up in a limo. Well, they started Raw last night with Mr. McMahon, who supposedly had been blown up,
right,
standing in the ring saying, our storyline tonight was my character, Mr. McMahon, his death was under investigation. But in reality, Chris Benoit and his family were found dead in their home.
And that's a pretty big deal, actually, for Vince McMahon to step, I mean, because even I remember that stuff, yeah, to step out of character and to be like, hey, bye, and do, because everybody knows the deal, obviously, but I mean, very rarely, if ever, do they ever, during an event acknowledge the storyline and then it's, you know, and the scripting of it and the so forth. So that's that tells you how huge it is that he actually broke character and explain why they were altering their storyline.
Yeah, they know, everybody knows that it's choreographed and stuff, but they like to pretend it still.
No, I actually watched, thank you, I appreciate the call, sir, thank you.
No problem.
I watched, I don't know, a couple of years ago, actually, was flipping by, I think it was the WWE, I don't even know if the WCW is around anymore. I feel like that might have been absorbed by the WWE, don't call to correct me, it doesn't really matter that much to me. I'm just saying, there are really a lot of things that never change. Let's get a couple more and then we'll break here and we'll come back with Tim Riley. Hi, Rick Emerson Show.
Oh, hey, I was calling about Benoit as well. You said that you stopped watching once he got big, but his gimmick was that he was a really intense guy, so he would go out to every single match and just, he would go full bore the whole time.
Well, I got a bunch of emails from wrestling fans saying that was his whole thing, was that he was just intense, he was just nuts about it.
Yeah, and the thing was, though, a few years ago, I think about two or three, he wound up actually getting a pretty severe break in his neck. And so they were able to get him back to functionality, but he's had to go on several painkillers. It's like on record that he's on painkillers.
He wasn't the guy that got killed, like rappelling into the ring or something a few years ago, was he?
No, that was Owen Hart.
Right.
Yeah, he had fallen 75 feet onto his neck, and he was done. No, Chris Benoit, I think he just took a bump wrong, but he got his, neck pretty severely broken, so he's been on painkillers.
Yeah.
And the thing is to maintain the type of intensity he had, he would have had to be doing some kind of amphetamine.
Yeah, well, so, I mean, that's the other thing, is just to be all cranked up like that, if your neck's been snapped at some point, you're doped out of your brain on painkillers, which are depressants by nature.
Right.
So.
And the thing is everybody's probably going to say, well, he was on steroids, but every wrestler's on steroids. It's most athletes are on steroids. It's,
yeah. Why?
It's pretty common. My guess is he probably got some kind of amphetamine that was laced with PCP or something and went crazy. Because to all of a sudden go nuts and kill your family, that's got to be some kind of temporary psychosis.
Always PCP. All right, thank you for the call, sir.
Yeah.
There you go. Always PCP. You know, can I just say this, and then we'll break right here and we'll come back with Tim Riley. That was a strange statement. I feel bad for PCP because PCP is like the guy that gets blamed for everything. You know what I mean? PCP is like in the family circus when Billy blames something on not me. You know what I mean? It's like a little not me guy, like running away from the broken lamp. Every time something, well, I think he was on that PCP. That's the only thing that makes somebody crazy. I mean, when I was in high school like 1,000 years ago, everything was the fault of PCP. Well, he jumped out a window. I believe he was smoking a marijuana cigarette laced with PCP. All right, let's take a break here. We'll come back. It's 503-733-2970. If I ever have a radio station of my own, like that I buy, I'm just going to call it KPCP. 503-733-2970. You say there's the Rick Emerson Show. Back after this with Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth. All right, hello, it's the Rick Emerson radio program. It's 503-733-2970. Look at that, we're only 2 minutes behind. 503-733-2970. Coming up later on, CNN radio correspondent James Roop, Ree Paris Hilton, Top 5, Dennis Pitzenbarger, Scotty J, and all of that. You say the, where did I put the, I was going to read one thing. Well, it doesn't matter. Ladies and gentlemen, at the Ministry of Truth, it is the Reverend Tim Riley.
Time for the Rick Emerson Noon News Hour from AM 970 Solid State Radio. And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
Bodies have been found in the Willamette near Lake Oswego. The first one was discovered snagged on a limb in a river between George Rogers Park and Maryhurst University. As crews are recovering that body, they spot another one floating by. They are about to be identified. Police have confirmed that two people have gone missing in the area. One is a 53-year-old Lake Oswego chiropractor, and then the other one was a fisherman. Paramedics rescued an Estacada man who tumbled 200 feet down a cliff near the Clackamas River east of Estacada. Danny Kane was conscious when the rope... Danny Kane.
Oh, okay. That's less interesting.
Yes, it is. The 26-year-old complained of neck, shoulder, and abdominal pain. He was airlifted to OHSU. Then another man, 20-year-old Nicholas Harris, was walking down a ravine to the river when the dirt gave way. He, too, ended up falling in the river.
Let's go hang out at the Clackamas River.
Bad dog. Charlie in the Black Lab drove his owner's car into the Penn Oriole River. This is in Idaho. As Mark Ewing walked home after returning from picking up a pizza, Charlie jumped into the car through an open window and apparently knocked the vehicle into gear. Somehow he got the car into neutral. My car just went boom down an incline and into the drink.
Bad dog.
He could only watch as his Impala sank in the river. No dummy, Charlie jumped out of the window just in the nick of time.
Fantastic. That's wonderful. You know, the only thing this story is missing is the obligatory, about two times out of three, this story will end with the owner dying because the dog will jump in, kick the car into driver neutral, and the owner, rather than jumping in to stop it, will jump in front of the truck and wave his hands to go, hey, you, stop that with the... And then the truck just goes over him. So, you know, maybe next time.
Then five teenagers have been struck by lightning. This happened in Cedro Woolley, Washington. They've been rushed to the hospital. The teens were at the Cascade Job Corps Center when lightning hit a tree and traveled to the ground below where they were standing. They were standing underneath the only tree in the area.
Okay.
So sometimes it isn't safe to be standing under
a tree. No. I think we established that. We didn't have a big conversation about this a couple weeks ago about whether to stand under the tree or not to stand under the tree. Mm-hmm. I think the conclusion we came to was if you are in a wide open field and there is a single tree,
yes,
do not stand there.
Well, these five teenagers didn't heed that warning, and they're probably not listeners.
Wait, are they dead?
They're probably listening to music radio, and that's why they don't hear these things. Now, they're alive.
I think we all know that that's not true, Tim.
They've been treated and expected to recover.
I don't understand. Please to be explaining now, and yeah. I'm not directing this at you. Please to be explaining, how can you get hit by lightning and not die? I mean, that's just mystifying. That doesn't make any sense.
Through you, Kevin.
Yeah, but I mean, so does a sword. I mean, that doesn't make any, that doesn't mean anything. Well, the bullet goes right through you. I mean, it's not going to hurt you. I mean, lightning is like a billion volts. How much, how many volts are in a lightning bolt? How many volts are in a bolt, Tim?
It's one of those days. Just, I feel a little bit.
How many bolts in the bolts? How many flagons in a dragon? That's still back in the Danny Kaye thing, the vessel and the kettle. Because, I mean, can't you get killed? Like, if you just took a
fork. Of course you can.
Thank you. If you just had a fork in your hand and jammed it into a light socket, or let's say, I'm being wildly speculative now, let's say Scotty was in here fooling with the lights in the studio before the show.
And the bolt of lightning went through Scotty.
And because Scotty had just yanked this light bulb out of this light fixture up here, and left it sort of, you know, without anything. And I was like, well, don't put your hand in there. Like, if you reach up in there and your hand goes into the socket, you're going to die. If you were to just jam a fork into a light socket while holding it, it would kill you dead, it seems to me. So
well,
I haven't
seen that.
Scotty, please jam a fork into a light socket. I don't understand how you can be hit by lightning, which is much stronger than that, and live. Mm-hmm. It seems like at the very least you'd be all burnt up inside. Well, whatever. I guess it doesn't matter. It's not going to, I mean, you know, whatever. It's probably not going to happen to me, so.
Oh, our internets are down.
It's an academic discussion. And I don't have any call screening either, so I have no way of knowing what anybody's calling.
Well, we can't look up information about lightning right now. I'm sorry.
That's
going
to have
to wait.
Somebody's going to have to call us. Hi, Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, Rick. What's going on?
What's up, brother?
Actually, I don't know whether that was too late, but one of the really eerie things about the Benoit was that last night when they ran the special, they ran it not knowing that it had been the double murder-suicide. Mm-hmm. And so Chavo Guerrero, one of the wrestlers, said...
oh, no. Is this going to be Wonderful Family, man?
Oh, yeah. And so he said that he would trust Benoit with his kids.
Oh!
Yeah.
Oh, that's so creepy. Are you kidding me?
It really was. Yeah, it was just really weird. And people were saying stuff like that the whole night, and they just had no idea... you know, they just couldn't pull it in time, I guess.
Oh, that's so creepy. And you know that's going to be in the internet.
I'm sorry, what was that?
They were doing a tribute to him last night, and this other wrestler, what did he say?
He said that he trusted Benoit with his kids, and that, like, he let Benoit take his kids to the movie.
Like, I'd trust him with my kids.
Oh, man.
Jesus. Well, that's unbelievably awkward.
Yeah.
God damn.
Hey, good luck with your news, and I'll talk to you later.
Thanks for being a real op, sir.
Absolutely.
Appreciate it. Thank you. We need we need a happy sounder on this program to play every time we have a call like that. No offense, thank you for the, that is interesting. But when we have a call like that and it just fills you with a kind of darkening gloom. We need some sort of
we don't have internet. We're just going to find out.
We don't have internet. No, we don't. We don't have internet or eBay. YouTube.
No, we don't have the internet right now.
You didn't say the internet. You said internet.
Internet.
Oh, by the way.
I started saying internet so much that now I don't call it anything but that.
We have a witness who says, the Benoits were always the happiest of people.
Mm-hmm.
Always. Except there at the end. Here's Tim Ryan.
Well, it seems that some children jumping up and down an oil tank caused it to explode. This is from Colorado. Authorities.
How are they dead?
Yes.
Sarah, do we have the Darwin Watch? This really should be a Darwin Watch. It's in Colorado. It's in Seamus country.
To go down.
Don't. I ate all my cat.
It's the flavor of Seamus country.
Don't. My parents won't let me use scissors.
Don't. Another one bites the dust.
Don't.
Another one bites the dust. And another one goes. And another one goes. Another one bites the dust. Hey.
My heart just stopped. Ah, there it goes.
All right, Ben. So this all happened when teens jumping up and down an oil tank caused it to explode. And were thrown 150 yards in the explosion. Two of these youngsters have met their maker. Several of these teenagers at a party moved near an oil pump. Authorities say 17-year-old Samuel Hedmark and 19-year-old Christopher Fuller jumped on top of the large 20-foot-tall oil tank and began to jump up and down. The tank exploded, killing the teens and throwing their bodies 150 feet.
Let me understand this. One of the guys who was killed by being thrown 150 feet, presumably into something flat and hard, was named Hedmark?
That's correct, yes.
Okay. I don't understand what kind of... First of all, an oil tank. But, I mean, for what? Like, is this like for
oil.
A... Okay, I know, but I mean, like to heat their house with or something? I mean, I don't know. Like, it wasn't just like a can of oil. It was just like a thing to run a generator, do you suppose?
I guess so. It says here, once they got on the tank and were jumping up and down, it caused it to release vapors from the tank through a release valve on top of the tank.
That's
then
mean.
The tank exploded. They say a cigarette lighter may have ignited the vapor, so we don't let their smoke on top of the tank contained 160 barrels of oil. Okay, so it was an oil tank that...
What? Why would you jump up?
That stored oil.
That's like...
And lit a cigarette.
You know, it's like... I don't understand the thought process. And this has nothing to do with age. This is just idiot guys. It's like when I was talking about, you know, those dudes that broke into that crypt and stole that guy's skull. And there was a whole lot of, like, there's a skull. Let's make a bong out of it. Like, I don't understand the thought process that leads from there's a skull to let's make a bong. I don't understand. We had that guy. We had some dudes a couple years ago in Texas, and one of them died because he and his brother were having a contest to see who could throw a brick in the air the highest and still catch it.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, the guy who lost, although he did catch it with his face, he looked up and, hey, look at that, wham, you know, right there. I don't understand guys who are at a party. I mean, how boring could the party have gotten if they decided to amuse themselves by going out back and jumping up and down on a thing containing 160 barrels of oil while flicking a cigarette lighter?
This looks like a desolate area. Probably no mall there.
No, I guess not.
Well, Bob Rogers, who was camping nearby, heard the racket the teens were making and got up to see what was going on. All of a sudden, there was a big ball of fire. It wasn't a loud explosion. It was just a whoomp sound.
Whoomp.
It was a horrific sound, though, and everything was engulfed in flames.
Fantastic.
That memory will haunt us forever.
Excellent. Well done.
By the time the police got there, the number of teenage partygoers had left, but they were able to interview a few who were still there.
All right. Well, that's wonderful. There you go. All right. There's your Darwin watch for us. Thank you.
I'm trying to cheer everyone up.
Another one bites the dust. Don't. Another one bites the dust. And another one gone, and another one gone. Another one bites the dust, yeah.
Oh, grief counselors are going to be in hand. This is the best part of this, though. When it says, it will be hard on their parents, said Bob Rogers, especially when you have to explain how it is. I wonder if parents of kids like this create alternate, more heroic methods of death for their kids. I wonder if it's a whole lot of, not at all. There was a school full of puppies, and there were locusts, and there was
in a much better place. And that place over there. And that place over there.
He looks so peaceful. 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 He's in pieces. All right. Here's Tim Riley. That did cheer me up. Thanks, Tim.
This might help, too.
Tim Riley, the Ministry of Truth.
Parents, make sure you put Mr. Yuck stickers on hand sanitizing gels. That from the Washington Poison Center advising after reports that a child suffered alcohol poisoning from licking the gel off her hand.
Ugh.
She has recovered, but some parents want schools and child care centers to ban the hand washing, according to the Seattle Times.
Yeah, that's what we should do in Washington today, to ban hand washing, because everybody there is so clean to begin with.
Removing the product would be unwise because it reduces the spread of illness. It suggests parents should dispense the cleanser. So far, the center has received 650 reports of children ingesting sanitizing gel in Washington.
How dumb is your kid if he's sitting there slurping down handfuls of Purell?
You ever see what those kids look like who live in those small towns?
There's no paste available. There's no paste. This will do in a pinch. Purell tastes, and I know this because I've never, you know, it's like you get some on your hands, and if you like a, you know, whatever, you scratch yourself or you're eating or something, and you get the taste of Purell. That, I mean, nature has ways of saying don't continue to eat something.
No,
and making it taste like Purell is one of those things. I mean, it's rubbing alcohol. So there you go. Mr. Yuck, I'd forgotten all about Mr. Yuck sticker. You know why I don't have any kids? That's why. I don't have any kids, and so as a result, those green Mr. Yuck stickers are things that I don't... And you know what? It's funny that Mr. Yuck supplanted... I haven't thought about this. Mr. Yuck supplanted the skull and crossbones.
I love the skull and crossbones.
It's a phrase you don't hear too often. Avast.
I thought it was a travesty when that was removed.
Was it just
Mr. Yuck is kind of a cartoon character. It doesn't signify something could hurt.
And here's the other thing, is that Mr. Yuck just makes it look like whatever it is you're about to ingest for fun might just be sort of distasteful.
It's like an upside-down smile button.
Exactly. Because Mr. Yuck, correct me if I'm wrong, he's just a green guy with his eyes shut and he's sticking out his tongue.
Right. The skull and crossbones is much better.
Skull and crossbones is...
Who needs business?
Hey, missing, totally. I mean, the skull and crossbone are messing around. This is going to kill you dead, as my dad
Why
would
say.
Why
do they change it?
I don't know the answer to that.
And who gave the okay for it?
I mean, is it
I
just...
Wasn't asked.
There must be some graft involved where somebody's son was designed, you know, somebody's nephew at art school was tasked with creating the Mr. Yuck logo, and that's where that came from. Mr. Yuck, by the way, prompts this thought. Do they still send Mr. Bubble? Do you remember Mr. Bubble?
I do. I remember the TV commercial.
Mr. Bubble was fantastic. I used to have... And it came in a box. You know, now that I think about it, do you know what I think Mr. Bubble was? I think Mr. Bubble was leftover dishwasher detergent.
Probably.
Because it came in a box exactly the same proportions, and it poured out exactly the same way. It had that little metallic drawbridge hinge thing on the side, like on your Morton salt dispenser. I think Mr. Bubble was just dishwasher detergent.
Well, he was a distant cousin of Mr. Yuck
and the Kool-Aid guy.
Yeah.
They were all related. The Kool-Aid man, who was disturbing to me as a child because the Kool-Aid man was always exhorting you to drink of him. It was like he was some weird Jesus figure. It was like he was offering you the blood of Christ, only it was like Purple Saurus Rex Kool-Aid.
Well, it's like dancing cows wanting you to eat hamburgers. What's the difference?
Seriously. You know what's really...
Anything.
Okay, now we've just completely gotten off the path. We were originally talking about a kid who killed himself drinking Purell, but that's his own fault.
Right.
Let's talk about... You know what else is disturbing to me? And I don't know if they still have these. These were out a couple years ago. Those ads, these are incredibly creepy. You know, it gives me the... Not the chills, but sort of a... It gives me an odd, dark feeling in the pit of my stomach, even thinking about these ads now. The ads for... Was it for Chick-fil-A? And it was a cow, not a cartoon cow, like a regular cow, but sort of photoshopped so it was standing up straight on its hind legs like a human. And it was a cow with holding a crudely drawn sign that said, "Eat more chicken." But it was like, but it was misspelled. It was all like done like a little kid would do it. It was like eat, like EETMOR. CHIKIN. And it was a cow standing up holding a sign that said, "Eat more chicken." And it was so creepy to me. I can't even really describe why, but it just made me feel, as Annie Wilkes would say, it made me feel all oogie. And it still does. Just thinking about it now makes me feel kind of weird, actually. I'm going to quit thinking about that crap right now. I don't know why the skull and crossbones thing went away. Now that I think about it, it pisses me off. I mean, it really does send a strong message. If you eat this product, if you ingest whatever's inside this, you will end up a pile of unwanted bones. The Mr. Yuck thing just sort of said like it was not going to taste too swell, which can be said about half the things your parents feed you when you're a kid anyway. I'm going to quit being angry about it now. All right, don't eat Purell, kids. I have no way of knowing what any of these people are calling about, but it really is the most... These are quite literally all on-screen calls here. Hi, Rick Emerson Show.
Hey, Rick.
Hey.
Best show ever.
Thank you, sir.
Hey, lightning. I'm from Colorado, so lightning strikes probably kill a lot of people out there, I imagine. But mostly what I've heard from people are that the lightning travels on the outside of you if you're not careful.
So it just seems like if just like those paddles that they use in the hospital, they're all like clear, you know, like that will... You know.
If you don't get lucky, you get fried, for
yeah.
sure.
All right. Thank
the
you.
The other thing is that, you know, they have been out in Central California, they have a thing called the Mr. Froggy Says Don't Swim in the Levees.
Mr. Froggy Says Don't Swim in the Levees. Don't swim in the levees.
I know a kid when I was growing up that jumped in the levee and he landed on a pitchfork.
Okay. I didn't think this call could get better, and yet it did.
Tim, I like this call and crossbones myself, too.
All right, let's bring it back.
Thank you, sir.
Yes, sir.
All right. Okay.
What can we do to bring back the skull and crossbones?
I don't know, but I like how when he was relaying how several of his several people he knew had been hit by lightning and killed, he was giggling uncontrollably as he did, and then giggling again as he described somebody jumping in and landing on a pitchfork.
Well, the healing process began.
Well done, sir.
And finished. He must have seen the grief counselors.
The healing process is complete. He's
hit.
He's over it now. It's such a conundrum. It's a quandary here about what to do. Well,
it's a redundrum. Let's do...
It's a quan... Yeah, what you said. Here's a rat in a sweater. Here's Tim Riley.
Up to the small towns of Michigan we go for the story of the Potato Queen, whose title has been yanked and she's not happy about it. The 2007 Munger Potato Festival Potato Queen...
Munger?
I barely knew her.
Allison Nowicki...
wasn't planning to relinquish her sash and crown until next month, until the next festival queen was to be named. But the Munger Potato Festival Queen Committee thought otherwise. She received a letter from the committee saying she did not attend enough events to remain the Potato Queen.
What are you supposed to... kind of events the Potato Queen really, really attends?
I don't know.
I am desperate.
Dairy Queen openings. And
would you like to cut the ribbon at a Walgreens?
Well, from the time the letter was dated, June 4th, Nowicki had little more than 6 weeks left as queen until the next queen was crowned at the 2007 Munger Potato Festival, July 26th. She is a sophomore of Lake Superior State University, and she was surprised when the committee decided she couldn't retain her crown since she has only missed one event during her reign. Since she was crowned last year, she made appearances at several events, including the Miss Bay County Pageant, St. John's Mint Festival, the Bay County Fair, the Montrose Blueberry Festival, and the Linwood Pickle Festival. Now, the only one I missed was the Bay City St. Patrick's Day Parade, she lamented. And I called the first runner-up and told her I wasn't going to make it. Nowicki says she had a mandatory meeting for school on the same day as the parade and couldn't make it.
You know, this makes me want to go back and find out whatever happened to all the Miss Kennewicks that they crowned when I was growing up, just to see if it did in fact lead them down a primrose path of fame and fortune, as I'm sure they were told. This is your first step to greater things. This is your first, this is the first brick on the road to glory, ladies. Except, you know who I think was a Miss Tri-Cities? I think Sharon Tate was a Miss Tri-Cities.
Oh, really?
The Manson, well, she wasn't a Manson girl, only incidentally. The girl that killed by the Manson family, I think she was actually Miss Richland or Miss Kennewick or Miss Tri-Cities or something. All right, here's what we've got. Hey, Sarah, when you lived in Pullman, did you ever go to the Lentil Festival?
No, but we'd laugh about it.
Because, you know, they do crown a lentil queen.
I know.
I remember being at radio, working at a radio station in Spokane, and I would get, just like we got the Oregon Association of Broadcasters packet yesterday,
they sent me another postcard today because I haven't responded yet.
Have you forgotten? Through some oversight, Tim Riley, you do not appear to have returned your OAB registration information. We hope to see your smiling face.
I've
enclosed $85.
Out of everyone in this building, why did I get one?
you've gotten two. You've gotten that and a follow-up. When I worked in Spokane, though, every year, I would get a huge envelope from the Pullman people about the Lentil Festival. And they would include, yes, a big bag of lentil. I can't even imagine how much they spent on postage over the years. Because they would send, like, a big folder and then a business card and, like, photos. And it was they didn't send out CDs in those days, but, like, a big photo kit. And then, like, a big, as though I don't know what a goddamn lentil is. Like, so, like, if you don't find the Lentil Festival exciting, enclosing a plastic bag of beans inside an envelope to me isn't really going to make me, it's not going to set my toes at tapping. Look, here's a bunch of things that look like big seeds. Would you please come? And so they had a 5K lentil race, lentil cook-off, and then they would crown a lentil queen every year. It's just the best thing. All right, here's what we've got. We've got somebody about lightning, somebody about eating hand sanitizer, and someone with, quote, a billion-dollar idea. What do you want to hear, Tim?
The billion-dollar idea. We all want to get rich.
All right. Hi, Rick Emerson Show. Are you the person with the billion-dollar idea?
No, but doesn't the Linwood Pickle Festival sound like something that happened to Paris at jail?
Hold on a second. Yes, and it it does. Thank you. That really was funny. Well, I don't know where the billion-dollar idea guy went.
A bolt of lightning can travel at the speed of 45 kilometers per second, 110,000 miles an hour. It can reach temperatures approaching 50,000 degrees.
See, that'll
cut enough to fuse soil or sand into glass channels.
That'll hurt you.
Yeah.
So why doesn't it kill you?
I don't know.
I mean, again, seriously, I don't know what the voltage or the watts or whatever. Like, I don't know the difference between a volt or a watt and a joule and an amp and a whatever. But, I mean, those things in the hospital that they zap you with when your heart stops, that's got to be less than lightning, I would think.
More than likely.
And so, how can that thing start and stop your heart and then lightning doesn't... It seems like lightning would leave you just a little pile of cinder. Mm-hmm. Just leave you... It would just leave you as a little pile of ash. All right. Hi, Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hi.
Hi, how can I help you today?
This is Karen again.
Yes. Karen again. Did you call us earlier today?
No, I'm not talking about cocoa and the mammary glands and all that.
Yes, ma'am, the mammary gland woman. Now I remember you.
Okay, the lightning thing.
Yeah.
It depends on where it hits you. Because if it goes through you and doesn't hit a vital organ, you can survive it. The fact of the matter is that there's a big difference between surviving something and walking away unscathed.
I guess surviving is a relative term.
It is. It means, but and like those heart things you were talking about,
yeah,
they do. It is like 50,000 volts.
But I mean, when
but
you
it's
say
directed into a specific spot for a specific amount of time, just enough to get it jolted into doing something.
Well, again, that's my question: is when you say the lightning doesn't hit a vital organ, I mean, no, doesn't it sort of? I sort of assume that if lightning hits you, it just, I mean, it electrifies your whole person.
No, because it's the same thing like getting hit by a car. You can have a glancing blow or you can have a direct hit. And so consequently, it depends on, for one thing, the charge of the lightning itself and where it's coming from. There's all different things that factor into it. And also about putting your hand in a light socket.
Yes.
You can survive that.
And show.
The reason that you survive those kind of things like the lightning bolts is it blows you away from it.
Okay.
So when you put your hand in a light socket...
Are you paying attention, Scotty?
I actually had a friend who's in his 70s now, who when he was a child did stick a fork in a light socket.
Fantastic.
It blew him across the room, and it broke every bone in that hand.
Fantastic. Well, that's like my... that's like when I was a kid. Well, it's not at all like this. I was going to say, when I was a kid, I was like 2 years old, and I think apparently my parents told me I stuck my hand into a rotating fan. Mm-hmm. My hand was small enough it would fit through the little... Whatever, yep, the little screen, stuck my hand right into a whirling fan blade. All right,
yeah, excellent. We have like really tiny screens on fans now.
All right, thank you, Karen.
You're welcome.
All right, there you go. This guy says, this doesn't sound real. This sounds like an urban legend. This sounds like an urban legend about how they have to start saying 911 in emergency phone call literature because people couldn't find the 11 button on their phone. That's an urban legend. Rick, the dubious theory was that the skull and crossbone symbols said to idiot and illiterate persons, pirate food. That's fake. That's an urban legend. There's got to be some other reason. There's got to be some other the motivation behind getting rid of the skull and crossbones and putting the Mr. Yuck thing on there. All right. Here's Tim Riley, the Ministry of Truth.
A Longview man was chasing his dog in I-5 when he was killed by an oncoming car. The dog, which escaped out of the owner's pickup truck window... it happened around 11:10 at milepost 86. A trooper contacted the 49-year-old on I-5 and noticed the dog was trying to get out of the truck. The trooper warned the man that his dog had run into traffic and caused an accident. The dog escaped, and the man tried to catch it, and he was hit by a car.
Bad dog.
Bad dog.
All right.
Healthcare officials in Calgary have unveiled a new ambulance designed for treating and transporting obese patients in an emergency, believed to be the first kind in the country. Even Canadians are getting fat. This can hold up to 1,000 pounds of Canadian. The population is becoming heavy.
It's only 600 pounds U.S.
That's true. We need an ambulance that can handle bigger loads and reduce injuries to our paramedics from lifting. How many paramedics does it take to lift a 1,000-pound Canadian?
I don't know, but I actually think about that sometimes because every so... Like, can I just tell you this? Mm-hmm. He in the dwelling next to mine, it really is a yin-yang thing in my neighborhood. There's where I live. On one side of me, there's a hot girl. On the other side, there's like the least hot woman you've ever seen in your entire life. She lives if you're looking at the street, she lives to my left. Her and her equally morbidly obese sister. Because there's always like four of those people that live in a house together. I don't know why. It's like four. And have you noticed this? And I don't just mean she's a little pudgy or there's more of her to love. I mean, these women who live to the left of me, they're massive. I mean, they're huge. As Kevin Spacey would say in The Usual Suspects, they're like orca fat. There's like four of them, and they all have kids. I mean, which presents not only a number of logistical questions, but really, it just does beg the question, like, who? Who and under what duress, and was there a gun involved, and how drunk, and for the love of
That's
God...
That's why there were so many mattress commercials.
I can't... Have you worn a large hole in your mattress? Has your amorous whale-like lovemaking worn a groove for your craftmatic?
I'm serious. I think that's why there's so many. I've never lived in a place that had so many mattress commercials running back to back on TV.
Like a bunch of furless polar bears humping it out. Anyway,
it's a multi-billion-dollar industry here.
Now I'm just picturing. It's just picturing Louis Anderson and Roseanne Barr.
Oh no, nobody wants to picture that.
Anywho. But no, the hideously fat women, the little kids, always standing outside, smoking on the phone, bitching about some husband who won't pay child support, blah, blah, blah. But the police and ambulances and many other federal agencies, and there's a lot of city employees and state employees and federal employees being summoned to that building for all kinds of things. But it's just a matter of time every month it's a matter of time until I see an ambulance arrive taking somebody out on a stretcher or something. But it's just a matter of time until one of those women has to be taken out on a stretcher for some reason. And goddamn, I preemptively pity the paramedics who have to put that woman on a stretcher and lift her up and stick her in the back of the ambulance. She's massive.
I mean, can you imagine? I mean, when they die, they won't fit in the crematorium, so they'll have to dynamite them on the beach.
No, seriously, I'm just picturing the paramedics putting on one of those weight belts, one of those lumbar support belts before they try to put her on the before they try to put it on there. I mean, I really don't know how that works when there is. When you are a paramedic and you go on a call, for whatever crazy reason, if the woman who lives to the left of me or one of her fat sisters just keeled over one day, God knows it's unlikely, and you were just called as just, some emergency paramedic guy to the scene, they don't tell you in advance, by the way, she weighs 800 pounds. I mean, when you get there, I don't know what you're supposed to do. Do you wait and, call for backup to lift her onto it? Do you roll her onto it? I don't really know how fat people are dealt with by paramedics. I'm not trying to poke fun at the fat. I'm just saying these are things I really do wonder about.
I do, too.
And Americans are just getting more and more huge. It's a one-way road. There's no going back on this. Just becoming a larger and larger country by the day. So, all right, it's Tim Riley.
Obese Canadian Chad Campbell weighs more than 560 pounds Canadian. Welcome the new crash wagon. Telling a radio interviewer, it takes 4 firemen and 2 paramedics to transport him to the hospital. The standard ambulances just aren't geared to handle situations like me, he said. A regular ambulance is for patients weighing up to 350 pounds, and they are now obsolete.
How telling, by the way, that he's been to the hospital enough that he actually knows what the ambulance can maintain weight-wise and what is what's overtaxing it. Mm-hmm. We should take a break here. We'll come back. More around the corner. More of your... apparently unscreened phone calls that we progressed through today. I would say that the show is progressing nicely given our the massive technical problems which are currently plaguing us. We've been very professional about it, though. We haven't complained.
No.
We haven't mentioned it until just now. We're doing this show under all manner of adverse circumstances. Okay, that's what we do. 503-733-2970. Back after this. You stay right there. What you mean. I believe linguistically speaking, Mr. Yuck is spelled M-R, period, Y-U-C-K. But Mr. Yuck, the trademarked logo is just spelled Y-U-K. There is no C. So somebody sent me this. Somebody sent me a Mr. Yuck television commercial from the 70s. Let's see if this brings back memories for me. I haven't pre-watched this yet.
Is me. Mr. Yuck is green.
This is really freaky.
It is.
It's just a big, the commercial so far is just a big picture of the Mr. Yuck sticker in the middle of the screen. And then behind him is a bunch of weird, surrealist imagery that looks like blood clouds underneath microscope glass, swirling around like you're at some weird Pink Floyd light show in 1967. Mm-hmm. Like it's something the Doors would have projected behind him at the whiskey. It just looks like a bunch of red clouds swirling around behind him.
Home is full of lots of things that children shouldn't touch. Home is full of bad things that can hurt you very much. Now there's a man whose face is green that you ought to get to know. He'll warn you when danger's coming fast or slow. Get to know his face in every single place.
Commercial's freaking.
When you see it, you'll know quick. Things marked yuck make you sick. Sick, sick, sick. Sick, sick, sick.
And there's a bunch of really crude animation of bottles turning into, demons and monsters, and then children rolling on the ground, clutching their stomachs and screaming. This is really disturbing.
Mr. Yuck is me. Mr. Yuck is green.
Well, thanks. Thanks.
That
so
needs
much.
To be added to our PSAs.
Yes, it does. I'll get LASIK on that right away. All right, here's Tim Riley.
Before her grisly death, Chris Benoit's wife told the judge that she was intimidated by threats of violence from her 220-pound husband. Filed in 2003, her divorce papers include a petition for protection from domestic abuse against Chris. In the papers, Nancy claimed that Benoit lost his temper, threatened to strike the petitioner and cause extensive damage to the home and personal belongings of the parties, including furniture. Nancy said she was in reasonable fear for the petitioner's own safety and that of the minor child.
I don't understand. Were they divorced or not?
Apparently, she filed the divorce papers.
Oh, wait, let me understand that.
And
let me guess. She filed divorce papers citing domestic violence and blah, 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 and then took him back.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well done.
Dismissed.
Yeah. Well, there you go. So, really nothing to... That seems self-explanatory. There's really nothing I can add to that. Let me get this one call here about fat people and ambulances. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show.
Hello.
Hey.
Hi.
Hi, how can I help you?
Well, I was just going to tell you there's a huge trend in fat people. We have millions. I work in the EMS system. I'm not a paramedic, but we have an actual special ambulance that picks them up.
So we have one of those in Portland, too?
Yeah, we do. Actually, it comes out of Clackamas County, and it's called
it
very...
Does.
What's that?
Nothing. Go ahead.
How close is Clackamas? Not very close.
Yeah, anyway. Clackamas does seem like the... Clackamas does seem like the obvious place for that ambulance to come from, you know, if Vancouver's not around.
But it actually goes all the way up to Longview.
Now, how, is it the ambulance itself that is reinforced, or is it like the gurney or the whatever, you know, the striker bed or whatever that thing is you put them on?
Both, actually. It's a bigger ambulance, and it has a huge gurney.
So how,
it's like a Wienermobile.
And it has, oh, I'm sorry, and it also has a winch with ramp.
A winch!
Send me the winch.
On your knees, winch! How fat a person can you be and still be ferried to the hospital by this ambulance?
I think you can be up to about 1,000 pounds.
Jesus.
No, wait, I'm sorry. I think it goes up
3,000
raised,
pounds.
Fully raised, I think it's 750, but you can do it in the lowered position to about 1,000.
We are gross. You could, wait, there's two positions? What do you mean, in the lowered position? What do you
lowered
mean?
Position means the gurney's all the way down on the ground, and the raised position means you have it fully extended, so it's up off the ground.
So, is this a question of whether the paramedics themselves are going to have to lift the person onto the gurney, or whether the whole thing goes down to the ground like a Tommy lift or something?
Well, if the person's too large for, say, six people or something to handle, they usually use the gurney all the way down the ground, and then they hook the winch up to it and roll it up the ramp.
Imagine having to be winched into an ambulance and then taken to the hospital. You know what you guys ought to do that could save some money? You guys, as a condition of this, anybody that has to be winched into the back of an ambulance because of their weight, you ought to film that and then sell those videos on the internet. I think it'd be a revenue generator, and a little public shaming might help curb some of the eating disorders in that part of the city.
Well, a lot of people actually have legitimate medical issues.
No, they don't.
It's actually quite sad to see it.
No one has a legitimate reason for weighing 1,000 pounds. That's not... I don't want to pick a fight about it.
It's a medical problem.
You know that that's not... You know that's not true. There are no bones big enough to make you weigh 1,000 pounds.
It is kind of sad that actually see people that large and have to transport them. It's pretty sad.
Yes, well, I suppose. All right, Susan, thank you so much. I appreciate you clarifying it for us.
No problem.
All right, thanks so much. All right. I know I can't come into work today. No, I'm too fat. Here's Tim Riley.
Officials have confirmed the horrifying details of the deaths of wrestling superstar Chris Benoit and his family. The Fayetteville Sheriff's Department said Mr. Benoit had sometime, possibly on Friday, murdered his wife by asphyxiation. Now, shortly after that, the same person, Daniel, and sometime later committed suicide by hanging himself in the basement.
Oh, it gets even grisly. Should I read this?
Probably well, not. I mean, well, let's just, first of all, and I don't mean to be morbid, I really don't, but I mean, it is
it's a big story. I mean, he was a big entertainer. He was a huge part of a certain slice of the entertainment world. I mean, I do, not to be morbid, but I suppose any statement like that probably is pointless today because it is an inherently morbid and sort of disturbing story. But I mean, really, obviously, as the evidence would unfortunately indicate, she in the end wasn't a match for him. But I mean, that must have been a really, unless he just drugged her or caught her while she was sleeping or something, that must have been a brutal way to go out because they were both professional wrestlers.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's the sort of thing that had it not ended so horribly, was this not part of some awful murder? But it would almost be funny. It would almost be ridiculous that there's this domestic violence between two professional wrestlers. I mean, it sounds like the beginning of some bad joke. But she was a big woman, too. I mean, she was, and she looked to be very in shape still. So, I mean, it must have just been, I mean, really the very definition of what growing up they used to call a knockdown, drag-out fight. I mean, it must have just been terrible. And then the deal is they think he strangled her and then what, smothered the kid?
Yeah. And then hung himself.
Yeah. Yeah, way to go, coward. Way to end your life with class, a-hole. God damn, I hate people. It's just, seriously, this is a whole parcel of people that we would just be better off had they just been left in an alley somewhere. God damn. It's just hideous. Is there anything else? I mean, is that pretty much it? Or is there anything else that's worse?
Well, they have the gory details.
But, I mean, is it true? Did they say anything about him killing the wife and then killing the son like a day later?
Yeah.
Right? So I think, like, they killed the wife Friday. Mm-hmm. He spaced it. I didn't want to overwork himself. He killed the wife Friday and then the kid Saturday and then himself whenever, Sunday?
Yeah. It's just hideous.
All right. Well... So there you go.
Vince McMahon made the announcement today.
The authorities are undergoing an investigation. We here in the WWE can only offer our condolences to the extended family of Chris Benoit.
Well, one thing, he starts sounding like a mobster.
Back in my day, he sounded like a normal human
being. Vince McMahon?
Yeah.
Oh, no, he's gotten increasingly more nefarious as time has gone on. He really is. I mean,
he was a Doug Llewellyn of the wrestling.
That's fantastic. I never really thought of him as that. Yep. He really.
Back when I was a boy, he was a Doug Llewellyn of wrestling.
Hey, can I tell you? Yep. I interviewed Doug Llewellyn one time. I interviewed Doug Llewellyn one time quite by accident. I was doing a morning show with Clyde, of all people. Mm-hmm. Clyde and I were doing our kooky morning show in Salt Lake City.
That sounds fun.
And Doug Llewellyn walked by the studio. And I happened to see him. We had a door with a little tiny slice of a window in it. And I happened to see a profile walk by the door. And I'm like, that looks like Doug Llewellyn. And we were busy doing some bit or talking or something. And I just like laughed. I'm like, hold on. And I ran out of the hallway. Doug Llewellyn. Dragged him in and interrogated him at length about everything I could possibly dredge up from my subconscious about the People's Court. Every question I could possibly come up with. No, Vince McMahon, it really is an American genius. He really is. You talk about a guy who took something that had just... He's the Garth Brooks of professional wrestling. Took something that was a marginalized slice of entertainment, something that was considered just for hicks, a very backwater, low-grade, low-rent, low-income type of entertainment, and turned it into a worldwide spectacle, global entertainment phenomenon with yearly grosses in the billions, I would imagine. I mean, single-handedly he did it. I mean, Vince McMahon changed not just that sport, changed the entire world of televised sports entertainment, indoor sports entertainment. Vince McMahon still holds the world record for the single largest indoor sports event ever, which was WrestleMania 3 at the Pontiac Silverdome, which I believe was 93,000 people. I mean, that guy single-handedly, it changed. Every time you watch the NFL, every time you watch any sort of televised major league sport now, you have Vince McMahon to thank for all of the advances in how they televise that, how they broadcast it, how they market it, how they sell it, all of that stuff. But with that, he has become sort of increasingly gangster-like in his appearance. You're absolutely right. He used to be very clean-cut, used to be very sort of all-American. You see him now, and he looks like somebody nicknamed the Chin who's going to take you up back and kneecap you because you owe Lefty $10. So there you go. All right. Well, I guess we'll have... Do we have any more on that right now?
Well, we do, but everything's blinking red.
Fantastic.
So
that's wonderful.
Red means no. No, no, not right now. Please come back later.
Oh, sorry. I'm sorry, Tim.
I'm sorry. We can think about giant penguins that once roam Peru, if you wish.
I'm sorry, Tim. I can't do that. All right. Well, let me get this. Because let me get this one call about goddamn gutless son of a bitch Chris Benoit, and then we'll move on. Hi, Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hi, Rick. This is Chuck.
Hey, what's up?
Hey, I've got a theory on why Benoit snapped.
Now, is this going to be a theory? Is this an excuse to make a crude joke, sir?
No, not really.
All right.
Does it involve PCP?
No. I think maybe he just found out that pro wrestling is rigged and he snapped.
See, that's what I was talking about when I said, is this going to be a retarded call?
Oh, come on now. You're being judgmental.
Do you see? Yes, I am. Guess what my judgment is?
You already told me, Rick.
Yes, all right. Thank you.
I heard you.
Okay, bye. We're done. That's too late. Thanks. Thanks, computer. I appreciate that. But you said about 10 seconds ago. All right. Here's Tim Riley, the Ministry of Truth.
Well, let's talk about these giant penguins once roamed to Peru, shall we? Giant penguins once roamed in what is now Peru more than 40 million years ago. Much earlier than scientists thought, the flightless birds had spread to warmer climates. Best known for their formal attire and presence in Antarctica, penguins today live in many islands, some even near the equator. But scientists thought they hadn't reached warm areas till about 10 million years ago. Our researchers report in this week's online edition of Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences in references to penguins that they found two types of penguin in Peru.
You get those guys together, it's a barn burner, mm-hmm. Let me tell you.
Well, apparently, penguins in Peru go back some 40 million years, and one of them was a 5-foot-tall giant with a long, sharp beak. This is the same age of the earliest penguins in South America. I wish that other system would come back up.
Are you just reading this penguin story as filler?
I am.
Are you just reading
really
it?
Did, but there really were giant penguins that
they're
were
with razor-sharp beaks?
That's correct.
That's pretty cool.
Do penguins kill things to eat? What do they eat?
They eat fish, I would imagine.
Okay, so they kill some. Imagine being killed by a penguin. If you got
a giant razor-beaked penguin?
If you have
scary.
To die, that's the cutest way to go. Really, it is. What happened? Well, I was eaten by a giant penguin. That really is... It's impossible to feel sad for somebody who was killed by it. How are you... it's sad about Rusty. Did you hear? No, whatever. Well, he was eaten by a giant penguin. I mean, that's just a cute, funny way to die.
And
that's how I want to go.
It was bigger than any penguin known today.
Well,
and
of course.
The largest known penguin to ever have lived.
It was a super penguin. The third largest.
Mm-hmm.
How big was the largest penguin known?
It doesn't say. They're still doing research.
Oh, that's
it.
That's
well, they're
a
only
jiffy.
Going back... They're only going back 40 million years.
So how big were the large penguins?
No, so you're saying they don't... So the 5-foot-tall penguin was the third largest, but they won't tell us. That's like when they...
5 feet tall?
That's like when they refer to something as being like, you know, the second best-selling song of all time. And then you're like, you're naturally curious about the number one and they won't tell you?
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's assume it was 40 feet tall. I want to be eaten by a 3-foot-tall penguin. I defy you to give me a cuter way to die. Smothered by teddy bears.
So maybe someday we'll revisit the story of the giant penguins that once roamed Peru.
Seriously, just like in a huge canister, in a canister that's like 100 feet high, dropped in, and then millions of teddy bears dropped in on top of you. That's a cute way to die. Hey, speaking of which, we had to come up with this joke for this guy on death row that wants a one-liner to go out with. Boy, it'd be a great day for the call screening software to be working. Oh, wait, no, I guess that's not today. Hey, Tim, Scotty says there seems to be something wrong with the network, just so you know. I didn't know if you were
network.
I didn't the computer network. I didn't know if you were aware of that or not. Scotty says there seems to be something wrong with the computer network.
Well, you know what? When I have to reach into my bag of penguin stories,
Scotty, maybe you should try to fix it by just randomly unplugging things in your studio. Maybe you should try unscrewing things and just jamming little bits of electric work together. All right. I honestly don't know what we're going to do right now. Tim, do some more news.
Well, it's time to prepare for the iPhone revolution.
Oh, great.
Yes, there's hype, there's history, and then there's history. Hype around Apple's upcoming iPhone is abundantly clear, so is the hysteria. But how the iPhone will leave its historic mark after Friday's launch is to be seen. Will the gadget, which triples as a cell phone, an iPod media player, and a wireless web device, be as revolutionary as claimed? Even if the product flops, and it can't because it's an Apple product for some reason, iPhone is already jolting the industry, showing it's just not the body and outwardly beauty of the handset that counts. It's what's inside.
I will say that there's one feature on the iPhone. And again, I say this with all due respect
just
to Steve Jobs.
Just one feature?
There's this one good thing about it. Well, I will say the graphical interface, I mean, Apple's good at designing the look of stuff. And again, I know people, because every time I say this, and you know how those people are, those Apple people. As soon as it's like they're like Grateful Dead fans or something. It's like as soon as you start busting on it, it's like they just flood my inbox with hate mail. Fortunately, today the internet's down and I can't read it, but I'm sure it's there. So I say this with all due respect. I do love Steve Jobs, and I admire what he has done with that company. I admire he is a legitimate revolutionary. Steve Jobs is a legitimately revolutionary figure in computing, in business, in marketing. I would say that Steve Jobs, I would go so far as to say that he is a genius in many ways. Maybe not a technical genius the way that someone like Bill Gates was, at least in the early days, but certainly in terms of marketing, positioning, running that company, identifying a need, in terms of aesthetics, certainly Steve Jobs a genius. So he is a hero of mine in some ways. That being said, there's just so much about Apple that I despise, and there's just so much about their culture that just fills me with a furious, pitch-black, tar-like hatred that I can never purge out of my system. Here's a couple of good things I'll say about Apple and then about the iPhone specifically. When I got my wife an iPod about a year and a half ago, I will say this. You know, if you bought, God help you, a Microsoft Zune.
Zoom? Isn't that something for children?
Zune. Yeah. Some kind of a breakfast cereal. People running around with 70s haircuts in front of a blue screen. If you bought, I can't even say with a straight face, if you bought yourself a Microsoft Zune,
flopping your arms in the air,
and you haven't already taken your life out of self-loathing, if you're still around and you bought a Microsoft Zune, you know what I'm talking about because I've seen the packaging. It comes in this big-ass box that has this list on the side of system requirements. Your computer must have, it's like 1,000 bullet points of, like, crap you must have in your computer. The book is, like, 4 inches thick. It's got 3, like, operating things that you got to install off CD. It's got all of these little pamphlets and, like, leaflets you got to read, you got to install. You know, when I got my wife the iPod, I will say this, and this, I know this sounds dumb, but it's true, and if you buy Apple products, you know what I'm talking about. The packaging and the box were so beautiful, I almost didn't even want to throw them away. The box, and it was just a cardboard box. It's just a paper box with an iPod inside. It was so beautiful, it felt like I was destroying artwork to open it. Because it has the little tab, the little thing that seals it shut. No instructions, no operating system requirements.
No, you're on your own.
Nothing, no, it's just a beautiful, clean, white box that just says, iPod. In like beautiful, elegant, evenly spaced font type, and I felt like
it
I
was served on a silver platter.
I felt like I was cutting pieces off the Mona Lisa when I opened that box. Even the packaging was beautiful. Even the bubble wrap it came in seemed beautiful somehow, you know. And then the thing's all like it, so it's white and it's all beautiful and fits perfectly in your hand and whatnot. So I'll say that, you know, even my Creative Zen, which I love, which I really really do love, love it with all my heart. It's a wonderful device. It came with just pounds and pounds and pounds of extraneous booklets and crap and CD-ROMs.
You're not
going to
read it or understand it.
No, I'm not going to read any of it. I don't need any of it. Creative just doesn't feel like Microsoft. They don't feel happy unless they sell you something with 1,000 pounds of extra garbage that you got to wade through to get to the product. Also this. The iPhone has this one really cool feature on it, which I am kind of...
many cool features.
I'm sure it does. There's one in particular which I am kind of jealous of. You bastards. You Apple sons of bitches. When you go to review your voicemail, it shows you the voicemail on the screen. How do I put this? When you press a button to check your voicemail, it shows you the messages as though they were emails, and so you don't have to check your voicemail in order. It just shows you a list of all your voicemails, what time, what number they're from, you know, all of that, what date, and then you press it to listen to that voicemail specifically. It displays all the voicemails as though they were emails in an inbox, and you can play the voicemails in any order you wish or not. I will say, that's a pretty slick feature. That's the kind of thing that Apple does better than anybody else. More than any other company, tech company, certainly on planet Earth, Apple is brilliant at coming up with those little, oh yeah, it never occurred to me, but now that they've done it, it seems so obvious. You know, that's a great little feature. I'll give them that. Not going to pay $700 for it, but it's a great feature.
It's only $499.
Uh-huh. It's $499. It's $499 on the page. Once you walk into the app, would you like a scratch-proof cover? That's an additional $39. Would you like this? What is it the Onion was joking about? Would you like a hat that you can wear that says, I own an iPhone for those scant moments you're not actually using it? Would you like a big thing that just you can stick on top of your car that, you know, that taunts other people for not owning an iPhone? You can have one of those for $150.
All right, here's Tim Riley.
We'll be back to more iPhone conversation in just a while.
Do you want to hear a giant beaver story?
I do.
Ah, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello, sir.
Hi. I don't have any beaver stories, but if it'd be all right, I'd like to volunteer a last joke.
Oh, for the love of God, hold on a second.
Scotty J, this is David Cassidy. I don't know what else to say.
Scotty, please come in here.
Going to Mount.
We'll get to your call in just one second.
I'll have
Jim Rope coming in. Pleased to welcome out of the Rick Emerson Show our intrepid PA, Scotty J. Scotty, I know you're operating under adverse conditions today, as are we all. How is it that you confuse whatever this guy's going to talk about with, quote, and I'm quoting from the screen now, giant beaver story?
Good afternoon, Portland. Number one.
Don't talk that way.
Is your name Charlie, sir?
No.
Okay, so you tell me what happened there.
Who are you talking to?
I guess I'm talking to the technicians. Because a guy named Charlie was on line three, and it's no longer Charlie on line three. So you tell me what happened there.
Do you go back and check these calls every now and again?
Every once in a while, but I mean, if they're still red and holding, it appears that that's who they are, you know? Uh-huh. And now we missed out on the story Charlie was going to tell us. It was a good one, too. It was the best one I'd ever heard.
What was that, Tim?
Oh, I just said, darn it.
All right. What are you calling about, sir?
Well, I was going to make a joke for Last Man Laughing, but after the Big Beaver buildup, I don't know if I can follow that.
For the Big Beaver buildup. In case you just joined us, there's a great story. It sounds so real, it doesn't seem like it could even be true. A man sentenced to be executed tonight in Texas is asking people via his website to submit the best one-liner that he will utter as his last words. What is your joke, sir?
Well, I was going to say, since he's getting the lethal injection, maybe for a last meal, he can ask for the antidote.
I suppose, but that joke doesn't work once he's already strapped in and about to die.
Well, if you got the antidote, the Beaver thing ruined it. It was really good.
I see it's the context that's made this joke feeble.
Damn those Beavers.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Uh-huh. Any other thoughts, Scotty? While you're here, would you like to blame anything else on the engineers?
No. Things are going great.
Maybe your drunkenness or your failure to shave this morning.
Yeah.
Why didn't you shave today?
I shave like every other day.
Did you forget you were coming to work? What's going on at your home?
Actually, I'm...
Does a teacher need to have a talk with the adult at the residence?
This is not about drinking.
Does a social worker need to pay a visit?
No. This is about going out of my mind, you know, and other people out there probably have the same problem when you're trying to get your house on the market, but you're not ready, but you put a sign up anyways. You're forced to do everything.
Why did you put a sign up advertising your house was for sale if you weren't ready?
Well, just thinking that you'll miss that one person that, you know, could have bought a week ago if I would have only
had
a sign.
But if you're not ready.
You're not ready, though.
Well, I'm ready now, but it's been one hell of a week and a half, let me tell you.
Are you doing this because you've already committed to buy another home?
Pretty much.
Just not enough debt in your family?
No.
You know, honey, I was thinking, can we triple our consumer debt, please? Thank you so much.
So, you know, I've been spending a week doing projects that would probably take me a year to finish. They're all done now, and so I'm a little scatterbrained, and it's showing in the job performance, yes.
Is it? Really?
Yes, it is.
I didn't notice that when you shorted out half the studio this morning by jamming your hand into a light bulb that we told you wasn't operating
correctly.
When
I fixed that electrical line in my house, it worked perfect.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
All right, thank you. Oh, by the way, we're going to fix your little red wagon a little later. Don't go too far.
Excellent.
All right, let's get one more and then we'll break. Hi, Rick Emerson Show.
Hey, Rick, I think it takes a big man like Scotty to admit that he's got a problem there. Speaking of big men, back to the ambulance thing and heavy people being lifted into ambulances.
Uh-huh.
My organization, which will go unnamed, has to involve itself with emergency transport. And one of the things that's happening in the industry around the area now is that each of the medical units are being asked to put on board their fleet an extra heavy-duty transport with a winch. So, in fact, you don't strain the back of your emergency technicians when they come to a supersized patient.
Right. It is the widening and fattening of America, sir.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you. All right. We should probably break here. We got Jim Rube coming up about Paris Hilton here. Just a few.
We have just learned Paris Hilton has got her hair done.
I love this show. It really is the best show you've ever heard. I might admit it. Come on. 503-733-2970. More on the hair of Paris Hilton. Paris Hilton. Hotel hair. Paris. Nice joke this summer. Scotty took my humor when he left the room. The Beaver joke ruined that. 503-733-2970. Jim Roop coming up. More from Tim Riley, Sarah Dillon, Scotty J, the top five. All of that. It's the Rick Emerson Show. Don't go anywhere. the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's 503-733-2970. Thank you for coming by. Coming up later on, top five, Dennis Pitzenberger, Tom Like is at 3, Donna Mike at 7. Ladies and gentlemen, let us now welcome to the Rick Emerson Show from the City of Angels.
Roof.
Hello, sir. How are you today?
I am well, sir.
Are you rested, my friend?
No way.
I'm sorry.
I've been up since 4 a.m. yesterday.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I was going to say, I slept real badly last night. So my wife was gone, and I always sleep bad. You know that whole thing, you get used to a certain way of sleeping.
Yep.
When she's not there, you know, blah, blah. I don't want to be all corny about it.
I
can't sleep when she's not there. And so it's that thing of like, I'm sure you had it way worse because you were in a car outside the Linwood jail.
Mm-hmm.
I was at home, sitting there, like, looking at the clock, like, 1 a.m., 2 a.m., come on now, you got
it. I had a thermos of Bloody Mary, though.
Come on, yeah, see, and I didn't, I just had a poodle, just sitting there, come on, Emerson, you got to get some sleep, 1:30, 1:45, 2, and then, of course, as you tick later on into the night, you start to get that sort of weird, I'm not sleeping yet panic.
Yeah.
Where you're like, God damn it, if I don't sleep soon, I'm going to be hosed. I'll only have 3 hours of sleep when I try to function tomorrow.
Which starts the adrenaline.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The I'm not getting to sleep panic sets in, which surges adrenaline, which means that you then never get to sleep. So, yeah, so I got like a cozy 2 hours, but it sounds like I have more than you got.
Yeah, sometimes when you get just that, it's worse than if you don't sleep at all.
I should have just gotten up.
I think I'll give Roop a call.
I should have just got out of bed at 4 a.m. and just started texting you to see what you were doing.
Yeah.
So you were outside. So what time did they let her out of the jail?
About 12:15.
In the morning?
Yeah.
All right. So, and I have to say, and because I'm a man, I'm honest about these things. I will admit such thoughts when they come into my head, and I concur with many guys that I know today. The photo that the Associated Press put out of her this morning when she got out of jail, she looks really cute.
She does. She looked age appropriate.
I think that's what it is.
Yeah.
She looked like a, and I don't mean this in a perverse way, obviously, she looked like a young girl. She looked like a beautiful young, or
she looked innocent.
A cute young lady.
She looked innocent.
Exactly.
Yeah.
She looked like exactly what she is, which again, you know, sort of young lady who's, whatever, just could be in any situation, very kind of a candid sort of photo. I think that's the almost universal assessment, is that she looked, I mean, no, who looks better getting out of jail? I mean, really, it's just so strange.
Well, also, I got to tell you, you know, we've seen her so much with that fake smile of hers, and this grin on her face last night was a genuine, gleeful grin. I mean, she was giddy. She was happy, and that added to the glow that she presented when she walked out of that jail.
She didn't look fake. She didn't look airbrushed or plastic, or she didn't have, you know, an inch of freaking makeup on.
You almost liked her for a second.
I did, actually, and I was in. I'm man enough to admit that. My friend Sneedon sent me this photograph, and he's like, I hesitate to say it, Rick, but she kind of looks cute.
Yep.
And that is exactly it, and she really did. And again, you know, it's a photograph, so who knows? I mean, it could be one frame out of, you know, whatever. But she did look like a real person. And so it remains to be seen. I mean, that may vanish as soon as she gets home. Who knows?
As soon as she opens her mouth on Larry King's show.
Well, that's my thing. It is very telling that she went in with such a ruckus and such a fuss, and that we didn't hear a peep out of her for the next, whatever, 12 days or however long she was in.
23
days. Yeah. So, which just seems to have gone by in a blink. And I mean, was she, by all accounts, kind of a model inmate? Did anything?
That's what they're saying, you know. And she thanked the deputies that she was leaving last night. You know, thank you very much.
And well, I mean,
and some of them, you could see it in their face. They're just happy to see her go. Because what a security nightmare that was. And others are going like, wow, man, it's too bad. You know, this was kind of fun for a couple of weeks.
I am amazed that there were no photographs that came out of her in jail. I really am stunned. I thought there would be. I figured there'd be a huge. Well, there probably was a huge bounty on those.
Well, when you go into that detention center, there's a big sign: no cell phones. They take them from you.
Really?
Yeah.
I figured that one of the guards would probably tally up whether the money was worth his love.
Not the LA
of that
County
money.
Sheriff's, Rick.
No, of course not.
Not the
what
LA
am I
County
thinking?
Well, you guys are all above board.
Well, you figure that one of those, some guy working there, and he's thinking, well, look, the Inquirer will pay me $200,000 for these, and I make you know, whatever, 50 grand a year maybe.
Yeah.
You know, how do I love this job that much? Is
that's
it worth
4 years I can look for another job.
Exactly. Yeah. So I am surprised that nobody, that we didn't get like some sort of, hell, man, I mean, the Inquirer got photographs of, got like Elvis in his casket or whatever the hell it was. I remember, I mean, those guys have been, they've got to get photographs of everything over the years. So I guess if they were not, if we didn't get photographs of Paris Hilton, they could not be gotten because they would have been. If they could have been gotten,
you're
they
right.
would have been.
It would be either on YouTube or TMZ, or you'd have them on your website. They would be somewhere if they existed.
So what is she doing? Is she doing the obligatory big party tonight?
I think she's cooling her heels. We haven't heard peep out of her. We know that she went to her grandfather's house, and that's about it. We haven't heard hide nor hair. I'm sure she probably had something to eat and then tried to get to sleep, but I'm sure the adrenaline was such for her, too, that she wasn't sleeping. So you guys, you could have stayed up all night talking.
You and I in Paris could have had a conference.
Would have been nice.
Yeah. So her dad, when you say her grandfather, that is that Conrad?
Baron.
Not Baron. Okay. So who, because this ties into a question we were talking about the other day on the show. Somebody asked whether the Hiltons, Paris's parents, whether they, I mean, obviously they're wealthy, but whether they were unbelievably wealthy or whether that was sort of an illusion, if they were merely wealthy.
They're, 20, 30 million, I think.
All right. So
something like that.
Not billionaires.
The billionaire is Baron.
All right. So, and is that sort of like when he kicks, the rest of them get it?
Yeah. She's going to wind up with the whole foundation.
Yeah. Well,
eventually. Most likely.
So I guess she does have reason to smile regardless. Is she on probation or anything now?
Yeah, for 2 years still.
And that's what kind of things...
Well, she has to, even though her license is suspended, she has to keep it current.
Right.
And she can't break any laws. It's as simple as that. You know, the first law she breaks, even if she spits on a sidewalk, for the blue laws, she can wind up back in jail if the judge sees fit. So she needs to keep herself squeaky clean.
And, of course, that's because we're terrible people on this program. That's, of course, the next question on our minds is, if she breaks a law, how long will they stick her in jail for?
Oh, I'm sure there's office pulls on a number of issues. Number one, how long will it take her to break the law? Number two, what law will it be? Number three, how long is she going to stay in jail when they throw her back in? Because they sort of have to now. They started this ball rolling.
Right.
Anything she does, they have to follow suit. So it'll be interesting to see what happens, man, as she emerges. And we'll tell a lot. I mean, it will tell a lot. Even though Larry King's a softballer, I think we'll find out a lot about Paris Hilton by the questions she attempts to answer tomorrow night.
Probably. And I will be watching because, you know what, as much as we make fun of her for being a dumb blonde and whatever, I got to be honest, I never watched The Simple Life, so I've never really seen her talk. So I will be curious to see how poised, because even dumb people can come off as smart sometimes if they're poised and they know how to string words together. I'll be curious to see what she sounds like.
That'll depend on who's with her. If she's sitting by herself, it's going to be a turkey shoot. But I'm gonna load up on all kinds of stuff and go, man, this is going to be fun. But if her parents or her lawyer or some handler is sitting with her, she's going to be checking every answer before she gives it. And, it's not going to be as much fun to watch.
Yeah, well, we can always hope, my friend.
Yes, we can, and we
always
will.
Hope. All right. I guess we didn't have to wait for Nicole Richie's breakdown when she gets tossed in jail later. So that's, I guess that's the next star on my horizon.
There it is.
All right, my friend. Well, get some sleep at your earliest opportunity and have a martini.
Thank you, my friend.
Thank you, Jim.
All right.
There you go. Got up since 4 o'clock yesterday morning. God bless him. That guy's a trooper. It's a soldier, what he is. Let's see. We got this. Rick, about that death row guy's quip. How about executioner?
I barely knew her.
Executioner?
I barely knew her.
Yeah, we heard.
Okay.
Just not amused.
All right. Hi, Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hello?
Hello.
Hi. I have a question that I'm hoping you can help me with. It's probably a better question for Lycus, but he would kill me. I think you are a little more empathetic.
Okay,
I'm going to nightclubs and doing some publicity for my business. And my boyfriend asked me in these words,
Can we hold on a second before we wade hip deep into this? And I don't mean any disrespect with this question. I asked only out of curiosity. Why did you pick us? Are you a listener of this program regularly? Okay.
Fairly.
Okay. And you'd say it's a question for Tom, but you feel like he would probably just lay into you. and so it. You're, and so we're next down the rung inside your head.
No. I think
I don't know. I'm not trying to be jerky about it. I'm just saying, after Lycus, we're sort of next up in your head of, on your list of folks.
Oh no, the reason why I'm asking you this question is I need to know whether or not I should be have been insulted by what he said to me.
So
and I think that you're a little more educated and you like women a little bit more than he does.
Well, we'll give it a shot. Okay, so Sarah, you listening up here?
I'm listening.
All right, so lay it out, sister. All right.
Okay. What he? We're going. I own a tanning salon, and we're doing some publicity. And what he asked me, he goes, "Are you
this
going?"
This is your boyfriend.
This is my boyfriend.
Okay.
He said, "Are you going to hire some really hot young chicks, or are you going to do this yourself?"
I'm sorry. Oh,
yeah.
Snap.
Yeah. Ah. He couldn't understand why I was mildly.
May I ask your age? Since I don't know who you are.
Let me describe myself.
I'm
39.
Okay, I was going to say that's a bad way to start. Down.
No. I'm 39. I have a six-pack. I have big fake boobs. I'm in awesome shape. I take really good care of myself, and I get hit on all the time.
What celebrity do you most resemble?
Oh, man. I don't know who I most resemble.
Everybody looks like somebody. Who have you been told you look like?
Really, nobody. Some girl from CSI that I don't think that I do, so I don't know.
Marg,
the blonde one?
All I know is that Marg Helgenberger or whatever.
No, it's from like one of the Florida one. I don't really watch a lot of television, and I looked at her. I was like, she was pretty, but
so
I don't.
So you talked about advertising your business, and your boyfriend said, "Are you going to get some hot young chicks to do it, or are you going to do it yourself?"
Yeah, I was just like.
And so you want to know, whether you should feel insulted.
Insulted, or because I am older than him, but I'm in 10 times. He's hot. He's out of shape, and I'm in awesome shape. Mm-hmm. I take really good care of my body because any chick who's had implants is very insecure, and I know that. I know I'm insecure. Should I have been insulted? He didn't mean anything mean by it, but he couldn't understand why I was upset.
I feel like I had to defer to Sarah before I even opened my big fat trap on this. Sarah.
You.
No, I think he definitely needs. I think maybe his heart was in the right place, but I could see why you'd be pissed. That's really.
I know. Okay.
I think that maybe he needs to reset his filter a little bit.
Yeah, seriously, I would say this. I would split the difference on it, and I'm not saying that to be a pussy. I mean, I really do believe this, that A, I do, in other words, I do agree with Sarah, that I don't think you should be insulted in that guys say all kinds of crap that they honestly really don't. Like, they don't mean to be insulting. Guys just say stuff. Guys, I think, are born without, like, the tact gene. I think that's really what it is. And there's a lot of debate between men and women about whether women want honesty or whether women want you to lie or do men want you to lie or do men want honesty. And really, I think men sometimes forget that honesty can be filtered through tact. And so they just jam that size 12 foot right down their gullet without even realizing it.
Size 13, God bless you. This is why I called you.
Well, it doesn't sound like he was trying to be insulting. It probably sounded like he was asking an honest question about, hey, are you going to get the stereotypical...
That's what people do. They get those promotions teams. Yeah. Like, you know, 21-year-old...
Right. Totally. Are you going to get the stereotypical 19-year-old model?
Right.
Or are you going to keep it in-house, do it yourself? But,
you know what, though? I've also bartended. I know what those girls do. They screw around. I want it done right.
Well, I'm just saying.
I know. They're super cute.
So I can see why it may be made for an awkward conversation, but it doesn't sound like it was. I wouldn't be insulted personally if I were you. It sounded like it was just a dumb guy thing to say.
And I told him. He couldn't figure out why I was mad. So I told him, I said, no, I'm going to hire some really hot guys with good bodies and that pay their bills
and
to do it for me.
Excellent. There you go.
I said, I would never kick you in your... I don't know if you can say where. I said, I don't know why you did that to me. And he goes, I didn't mean to.
Yeah.
So that's why I called you. Thank you.
Yeah, guys just kind of filter everything through a big layer of dumb sometimes.
That's right. Why I called you and not like it.
Right.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening.
That's awesome.
All right.
Bye.
There you go. Thanks so much. All right. There
you
go.
She sounds cute.
Okay, one final call, then we'll break. We'll come back with Tim Riley, and then we will fix the little red wagon of Scotty J. I'm sorry, am I interrupting some phlegm removal?
No, you aren't, Rick.
Okay, how can I help you, sir?
I know sometimes you struggle with the arousing speech for the opening of the show, and I thought I'd give you an audio clue for something you played a long time ago.
Okay. This is because, we've taken to starting the show with a different movie clip, except then I always forget to do it, and then Sarah punishes me with the Independence Day speech.
Well,
so, yeah.
I'm not going to actually play it. I'll just play a hint so you can come back to her and give her a what for.
Okay.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
Here it goes.
28. 27.
26th.
Oh, it's any given Sunday.
24th. Very good.
It's any given Sunday. And because you are playing back the opening to our very first show on this station when we came back from unemployment, in which
after,
we did a
after the unpleasantness.
30-second countdown followed by Al Pacino's speech from any given Sunday.
Which is quite rousing.
Yeah, no, it's a great speech. We claw for those inches! Yeah, no, that's a great speech. Right, we'll do that again. Maybe we'll do that on the, I don't know, like the anniversary or something. When we
anniversary would be perfect.
All right.
Well, excellent. There you go, Rick.
All right, thank you.
You got it, all bye. Right.
By the way, apparently the girl that, what's her name, was referring to is Emily Proctor. I hardly know her. Who was on CSI, but she was Ainsley Hayes on the West Wing. And she is, in fact, hot as balls. Yes, you are correct about that. Thank you, sir. All right, we got to take a break. It's 503-733-2970. We get back, somebody tells us he had a mouthful of Purell. All right.
We can experiment. I have some Purell right here.
Scotty, please come to the studio. All right, back after this, the Rick Emerson radio program. Let's say that on the air.
No.
Oh, hello. It's the Rick Emerson radio program. Now, I know your pain, though. Because I'll go, you know, like, I'll go to get my hair cut, and they always want to engage me in conversation. And I don't mean to seem like an ass, but I hate small talk. That's my thing. I don't mean to be a jerk. I really don't. It's not. I'm not trying to be snooty or better than anybody.
And you can tell because they don't want to make it anyway. They're just required to ask you, like, what you do, how you are.
Exactly. And this has nothing to do with me being, you know, I'm dying to radio. I won't talk to it. I've always been this way.
You could give them some index cards with suggested questions.
Question number one. Hey, customer, would you like some irritating, tedious small talk? No?
Okay.
I just, when they ask me, so, how's your day going? And I'm just, fine. You know, I just try to be real. I don't want to be out and out rude because they're busy cutting my hair and I want to be maimed. But I try to keep my answers real short and I sort of grunt a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great.
Every so often, because it's luck of the draw at that place, every so often I'll get a hairstylist or whatever that just doesn't speak. I don't say doesn't speak unless spoken to me. You know what I mean? Doesn't try to make small talk with me unless I start. Mm-hmm. And I don't. But, man, most of the time, it's like they're just, so, what do you do for a living? You know, and I don't want to open that can of worms, because then it's just, you know, I'm on the radio.
Oh! But if you handed them an I am a deaf mute card.
I hear my bang! I'm totally going to do that.
Go get some. Where do you buy those cards?
Sir, highlight and layering. And they're all.
Don't you think that's a good idea?
And they're all hot girls that work there too. So I feel compelled to talk to them when they talk to me. I can't just shun them. I can't ignore them because they're always hot girls in like low cut tank tops. And so I feel compelled to be polite. I wish that place was just staffed by dudes, and I could just ignore them happily. All right, ladies and gentlemen, at the Ministry of Truth, it's Forever Jim Ryan.
Sad.
And now from the Ministry of Truth, it's Tim Riley.
Breaking news: Paris Hilton just got her hair done. She had a 9:30 a.m. at-home appointment with Dreamcatcher's hair extensions.
Oh, please tell me you're lying.
No.
Dreamcatcher's
hair extensions. They came to her full-length 20-inch extensions, blonde, of course, says the Dreamcatcher's rep. When asked if she'd be on the town tonight, the rep replied, wouldn't you?
God damn, that is so... Is there anything trashier than a hair extension place named Dreamcatcher's? Mm-hmm. What, did they fly them in from Gresham? Jesus.
I don't know.
That's terrible. That's awful. I don't
know if there's a Gresham Dreamcatcher's.
What is the Gresham? Where does Paris live? Beverly Hills?
Yes.
What's the closest?
She doesn't live in Gresham.
What's the closest Gresham-type city to Beverly Hills?
How far would be Sepulveda or Panorama City? I used to live in both.
I should just ask you to put pins on the map where you've lived.
Exactly. Panorama City would be up there.
Fantastic.
Van Nuys is pretty tired, too. That's where I got run over on the bike left on the side of the road.
I'm sorry, I'm not laughing at that.
I'm sure you were laughing at that. Just visualizing that.
You have lots to talk to Todd Gorger about. Oh, okay. Here's Tim Riley.
So, cameras were there at the scene, of course, when Paris was freed early this morning.
The retards!
Crisis consultant Eric Denzel says Hilton's career has been a spectacle and her only agenda revolves around camera angles.
From a business perspective, Paris Hilton doesn't have a crisis. Paris Hilton is a crisis. There is no good name to recover. It's not like she's applying to be a Supreme Court justice. She is in the business of getting attention.
Hater. He did sound a little overly snippy.
He did
sound a little angry about this. A little angrier than really was like necessary, strictly speaking.
Yes. Well, Georgia, this is serious now. Georgia police have confirmed the double murder suicide and the death of pro wrestler Chris Benoit, along with his wife and son, found dead in their Georgia home.
Now looking at this case and ruling it as a double homicide, suicide. Evidence in the home leads us to believe that Mr. Benoit had murdered his wife by asphyxiation.
God, what a dick. It is kind of interesting, just as a real side note here. First of all, two things. A, when we were talking about Chris Benoit this morning, and Tim noted, Tim's first response was, they let a man with a French name be a wrestler, which is sort of interesting, actually. It is kind of a less than manly sounding name to be a professional wrestler. Although, I got to tell you, it is sort of, wrestling has come a long way. I mean,
even the French can wrestle.
Well, do you remember, what's his name? Gorgeous George. I mean, it's come, he used to be, you know, it used to be that that you had to be just completely on the other side, image-wise, to be a wrestler. But it's like him and what's his name? Who's that other guy? Goldberg. It's just so odd that there's a wrestler whose sole name is Goldberg. And now, Kornblum, the wrestler, please make me... Will you please put your hands together? Finkelbaum! But there's a guy just Goldberg, and I believe he is actually covered in gold paint. I don't know that I'm right about that, but I'm pretty sure that I am. I believe he's a man who's actually painted in gold head to toe. Anyway, so this Chris Benoit dick. So, blah 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 that, and then I had some other comment I was going to make, but so he killed his wife and his kid, and then I guess saved us the trouble of sticking him in jail, hung himself.
A wrestler's friend Bill said Benoit was an easygoing fellow.
He was very pensive. He was quiet. He didn't let a lot of people know what was going on with him personally. But whenever you saw the family unit, his kids would come to the matches in shirts and ties. He was just like the dad you always wanted to have. And
not so much.
I just don't get this.
Maybe less so now. Did he say that he had kids? Multiple kids? That soundbite made it sound like there was more than one kid.
Yeah, I thought he only had one.
It said that he had two from a previous relationship.
Oh, that's a surprise, because he did seem like such a great guy. What with the domestic violence and so forth, and the impending divorce, and the hey-hey, and the whatnot. By the way, just a little bit of levity on this. I will say that when he said this morning his name is Benoit, we all immediately thought of the Asian sexual aid. Right? Isn't that an Asian thing? Where it's like little two little
Asian... Is that what those are called? Wait, I don't know what you're talking about.
Those things. I'm not even sure if that's a thing. You can say that on the air, can't you?
Well, I was thinking about...
Hold on. Let me Google it right now. I believe that's a... You know.
I don't.
I'm hitting... Of course, now Wikipedia failed me. Oh, wait, here we go. You know, Wikipedia has a terrible... They ought to be like Google and correct your spelling. I believe, okay, so Benoit balls, which I believe that translates in Chinese to internal use balls, which is hilarious. Doesn't internal use balls sound like some sort of mislabeling on a porno film? See Peter North in internal use balls. The internal use ball is like some sort of a party where porn films get together. Are you coming to the internal use ball? So the small sexual aid product, it's like those executive balls on the desk that bounce back and forth, except that there's just two of them. And they're connected by a string, apparently.
Like these?
No, that's different. That's for anal relaxation.
Oh.
Isn't that what it says on the thing?
To relieve tension.
I'm sorry. To relieve anal tension. Just that little sound was priceless there. No, that appears to be a...
Is that hung up next to the thing because people have a heart attack?
Break in case of anal tension. Break glass. My God, man! Quick, go to the kitchen. Jensen has anal tension. Something's got to be done. No, that is the thing that you were just holding there, Sarah.
Yes.
Which is still in the package, by the way, and I'm glad that that's just sitting in the studio where...
It also has a partner.
Anybody from the HR department can walk in and just sort of see it laying around. Thanks so much. Why is there a big bottle of... What is that even... Can I see that? Hold on. Is this from the taboo guy who gave us the big...
I certainly hope so.
Why... Okay, let me ask you this. Never mind. I was going to ask, and then I realized I don't really want to delve into the answer, so to speak. I was going to ask why this kind of lubricant needs to be cherry-scented. I mean, really. That's perfume on a pig, isn't it? I mean, seriously, I mean, there's certain things that aren't going to smell better. I don't care what flavor this lubricant may be. There are certain things that are... It seems like they just smell how they smell. All right, we should just stop this whole line of conversation. Yeah. Let me just give that back to you, Sarah.
Ooh.
That thing you were holding were not balls of any kind.
It looks like a string of balls. Open. Can't get it open.
Meanwhile, in completely unrelated news, one hopes, here's Tim Riley.
Ryan Donlan and Jennifer Farina have taken a vow of silence and will only communicate to each other for a month using M&M's personalized candies.
Oh, God.
Jennifer says, as a woman, it's going to be extremely difficult not to speak.
I think it's going to be really tough when I get done after my day, because we usually talk back and forth about our day and how things have gone, sort of like a weight event, and also talk about the good things. And so I think that's going to be the hardest.
Imagine how interesting their conversations must be if they're the type of couple that dreams up talking to each other via M&Ms for a month.
This couple has been given M&Ms featuring the whole alphabet, numbers and symbols, 300 common phrases such as I love you and feed the cat. They'll be able to compose 30 original messages each to use. The couple's last day of silence will be July 26th.
All right.
People are lame.
Yeah, they really are. Hi. Jinx. Hi. Hello? Interrupting.
Somebody, swinging music.
Singing some of these golden hits of the 70s collection. Hello, sir.
Maybe he just wanted to play you a song.
Joe. Hello, Joe. What do you know? Joe.
I think it's Amy Winehouse.
How sad. Joe. Oh, for the love of God. All right. He has some humorous observation to make. Well, that's too late now,
not
sir.
Not more.
All right. Hoist by your own petard, ye are.
Are you still searching for the giant beaver call?
No. No. I'm busy looking at these internal use balls. All right, here's Tim Riley.
The war chest of the Democratic Party frontrunners are a little more well-stocked thanks to fundraisers who both candidates last name Chicago. Hillary played up her Chicago hometown roots. Huh. That's one of her, like, 10 hometowns. Joking that who might see her at any event in her long-ago hometown?
My best friend from sixth grade, and you know, maybe even the boy I went to the prom with. I mean, it's...
Obama says he's done better in Hillary's hometown of Chicago than she's done.
If you tally what we've done in New York and what they've done in Chicago, I think we come out pretty well.
All right. Well, there you go. Let's see here. It's just nothing but... Nothing but calls about all kinds of various things that I, let's see, Rick, where is this barber shop with the hot girls? My local haircutting place has what looks to be contenders for this year's Kentucky Derby working in there. My name's Alice, grab a chair. what setting do they use on you? Let's see here, all right, I don't even know what the hell I was going to read here. Rick, cutest way to die. Hugged to death by a koala bear. All right, here's Tim Riley.
Newark, New Jersey school superintendent Marion Bolden has issued a public apology for her decision to have a photo of a gay male kissing another male stripped from the yearbook and blacked out of every copy. The young man in question is 18-year-old Andrew Jackson, who paid to have that picture put in the yearbook.
I felt hurt, you know what I mean? I felt like it was something that they were doing, like, to erase me.
Was his name Andrew Jackson?
Say
Ben Franklin.
Andre Jackson.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
White House spokeswoman Dana Perino has stepped aside, answering questions about the Washington Post series. And behind the scenes, Vice President Dick Cheney. Perino was asked if Dick Cheney is
out of control.
A lot of what is being talked about there is classified, dealing with classified issues and following the attacks on our country on 9/11.
Please don't ask me more questions.
I'm not going to opine on those. I'm not going to say one way or the other about the articles.
She sounds very jittery.
Yeah,
sounds very
jittery.
Yeah. Well, because of George, look, I mean, if you're the spokesperson for George W. Bush and you make a mistake, that guy's so daft. He's as thick as two short planks. He'll never figure it out. You make a mistake, you're screwing Dick Cheney. He will, what is it they used to say in Russia? He will have you disappeared.
Yeah.
You will end up buried in a forest somewhere in Leningrad. All right.
Perino dismisses allegations that the vice president is ignoring an executive order to hand over classified information.
The vice president is in compliance with the EO, as is the president. So that shouldn't be a question.
Please don't kill me.
Please don't answer that. Stop it. Stop it. Give me a break.
He'll hear you. He's everywhere. Like he's Voldemort.
He's hiding in the shrubs. I see him peeking right now.
That's the best photograph ever.
That is.
Photograph of Bush speaking with Dick Cheney hiding in a shrub. Just
don't forget what I told you.
Making no attempt to hide, though. That's the best thing. He was sort of standing 50 yards away. You know, but only, like, the shrub only came up to, like, his knees. Like, he clearly didn't care if anybody saw him. It was like he was willing us all not to notice him through means of some evil Sith force field. Oh, man. All right. Well, let me just read a couple of emails here. And then we'll take a break. So, you know, Sarah had this problem with her shower apparently turning itself on. Also, she revealed today that her quasi-boyfriend was having difficulty sleeping there the other day because even though he was alone, while he slept, he heard mysterious voices screaming his name into his ear while he slept.
Not mysterious voices. He said that he woke up more than once hearing his name being yelled
by a voice.
Well, by his voice, yeah. Not voices.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. It was one mysterious voice.
Okay, whatever.
In the apartment when no one else was there. Listen to this. Rick, because we, you know, you have said, I'm not giving any away here, you said that you live off Hawthorne Boulevard, right in that general area.
Mm-hmm.
Rick, historically, Hawthorne Boulevard was once mapped as Asylum Avenue.
I've heard that. I've read about that.
The original asylum was located off Southeast Hawthorne. Could explain Sarah's haunting, says David.
What area?
Well, I don't know, Sarah. I think you may have discovered the answer to that.
Oh, no.
What else do we have here?
Lake Oswego is once called Sucker Lake.
Sucker Lake?
Yep. They changed the name of it.
Why was it called? Is there some reason for that?
I don't know. It's full of suckers, I guess.
Interesting. Let's see. I found the most dangerous website here. This website, listen to this. Rick, here is a link to a site that allows you to upload a picture of yourself. The software will then match your facial features to those of a celebrity. So it'll actually tell you what celebrity you look like. This guy says, among my matches were Billy Bob Thornton and James Coburn. Oh, and Jim Henson. Fantastic. That doesn't sound like it could possibly be very accurate. Oh, God. All right. By the way, just spare me the... It is too soon. It's too soon. Spare me the WWE jokes. You gotta wait like a week for that. It's unbelievably too soon. It's so too soon, I can't even really explain it. God, all right. Scotty, I can't see whatever line one is here. It's all obscured. All right, let's just do these calls, then we'll break and we'll come back. More Tim on the way, by the way. Hi, hello, Rick Emerson Show, hello. Oh, for the love of sweet God Almighty.
Is this
Almighty.
The same dude again?
It doesn't, but
it's
it claims
song.
To be... Scotty, what do you suppose is going on there, Scotty? Oh, good God. Hi, Rick Emerson Show.
Hi, Rick. Along the lines of the Benoit Ball conversation, okay. I was helping a work cohort move a dresser at his house the other day.
Uh-huh.
And opened up the drawer to get a grip.
To get some leverage inside, yes.
Yeah, exactly. And he goes, oh, that. And
did he do that? No, leave it closed.
Yes, and there were some very interesting things in there. Lots of all the normal stuff, and then there were some things with some straps and all kinds of stuff.
Does he live by himself, sir?
No.
Okay.
No. And it was a little bit freaky. So
that's that's kind of a window into someone's life that you really don't think of. Find out. All right. All right. Well, we should break it. We'll come back. Tim Riley at the bottom of the hour. When we come back, we'll talk to Scotty J tell him a few things about a few things. Boy, just let's see what else. Well, we should talk a little bit more about this Harry Potter thing when we get back. All right, you stay there. Back after this. It's the Rick Emerson radio program. Don't go anywhere. Rick, I tried to call into the show, but there was some weird music screeching down the phone line. Wanted to let you know how great it is to have my ear blown out by a Sean Paul song at 200 decibels. Thanks, Scotty. Yeah. No problem.
God, that's Scotty.
That's Scotty. 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. This email says, Rick, please don't give too much away about that Harry Potter screening. I already have to compete with the damn out of school kids for seats. So are you going to go to that thing?
God, no. Are you kidding me? Being crammed into that small of a theater with a bunch of screaming children?
Okay. I guess that's a no.
Well, I would like it. Like, ideally, I'd like to. But you know that situation's just going to be terrible.
Yeah, no, it's going to be. Well, I don't know. It might. The Harry Potter thing might not be full of kids because, and the only reason I say that is because,
well, if it's in, have we already said where it is?
No. Well, okay. I did at the top of the show. I mean, that mall.
Well, if it is where it is, I mean, word of mouth will travel.
And that mall typically is just full of screeching children at the movies.
Pregnant teenagers wobbling around.
Yes, like 5-foot penguins. I will say this. No, I will say this, though. That it's like, because we went to see a Nancy Drew. The theater was pretty quiet. And I remember thinking to myself, God, this is a really quiet, respectful audience. I remember these because it was largely, you know, it's a bunch of oldsters. And I remember thinking to myself, well, the Harry Potter movie, you know, boy, I wonder if that's going to be loud. But you know what? I think that the geeks will get there early enough and full enough force to keep the idiot kids from showing up for that. And I think any kids that do show up for a Harry Potter advanced screening will probably be pretty pretty geeky and therefore respectful of the film. But I don't know. I might just be making that up. Before we do anything else, let's with the
Scotty J. This is David Cassidy. I don't know what else to say except
you're not going to amount to jack squat.
Beat up, Scotty.
End of message.
By the way, I will be seeing Die Hard 4 tonight, just so I can wade knee-deep into the suck and report back. It's not going to be any good. In fact, it's probably going to be all kinds of terrible. It's so bad, actually, that I think Scott Daly doesn't even want to go, which is why I got invited. Because Aaron, I think, has no one else to go with. I don't think he can convince anybody else to go along. So I got the call. So I'll be seeing the abomination that it is Live Free or Die Hard, which doesn't even have his catchphrase in it. It's not even rated R. It's got Kevin Smith in it. Never a good sign. So, anywho, it's 503-733-2970. Scotty J, hello, sir.
How's it going?
Scotty.
Yes.
Do you remember, let's see, do you remember yesterday?
No, I
think
don't.
It was.
Scotty.
You're doing that thing again.
It's that thing I do.
Are you finished?
Yes.
Finished being Mr. Funny Man? All right. Do you remember yesterday coming in, I think before the show, and relaying this message to Sarah? This is what Scotty did yesterday. Scotty comes in, and I think it was at like 10:45 or so. I think it was before the show had even started. Scotty comes into the studio, and he says, "Hey, Sarah, Omzi called for you." And Sarah said, "Well, about what?" And Scotty said, "Well, Omzi called because they want to know if you want to take part in a stop smoking program." And Sarah said, to her credit, quite honestly, "Well, screw that. I don't want to quit smoking. I have, in fact, Sarah's exact, your exact phrase was, I have no desire to quit smoking, Scotty," which is great. You know what? And I give you props for that. I give you respect for being upfront about it. You're not one of those people who says you want to quit smoking and then you don't do anything about it. Like a fat person that wants to lose weight and keeps shoving cake into their mouth. So Scotty's like, so you don't want to do this OMSI thing where they help you quit smoking? So I was like, no, F that. I don't want to quit smoking. Get out of here. And Scotty left. Do you remember that?
No.
Don't be a dick.
Yes.
Okay. So now that you remember. Oh, wait. Do I just hit zero to get Dave's in?
I'm sorry? Then zero.
Let's see if we can get all the Dave's in.
Hello.
Hey. That's kind of freaky. Dave's in. Hello, sir.
Hello, sir. Hello, Rick Emerson audience.
Hi. Hi.
That's strange.
Hello, people of the world. All the ships at sea. Let me ask you this, Dave's in. When OMSI called yesterday, were they specifically looking for Sarah?
Yes, they were.
Now, are you sure about that? Because this seems like a different story than what you told me yesterday.
They originally asked for Sarah specifically.
Okay.
I told them the show had just started, so I let them know that she's on the air, but I will pass a message on to Scotty J.
Okay. Now, when you and I talked about this yesterday, it seemed very much as though OMSI was calling looking for, quote, someone on the show who might be interested in stopping smoking.
That is correct.
Okay, I see. All right. Now, did you pass them Sarah's way specifically?
I mentioned that Scotty and Sarah may know someone that needs to quit smoking.
It's very important, and again, I'm not trying to pin this on you, so it's very important that I understand this. So when OMSI called you, you answered the phone, and they said what to you? What did OMSI say when you first answered the call?
May I speak with Sarah Dillon?
All right. Because, now, that's probably not because they think, in fact, they have no way of knowing if she's a smoker. That's because her name is on the show as producer, right?
That is correct.
I see. See, now this is exactly what I'm talking about. Okay. And then you said she's not available. She's on the air right now. Probably you probably said, like, what is this regarding?
I was just like, can I pass a message on? And they were like, well, we're promoting a specific campaign through the Body Worlds, you know, the exhibit.
To help
about
someone...
help you quit smoking.
All right. Excellent.
Segment.
And then you gave that information to who?
I wrote it on a Post-it, and I passed it on to Scotty J.
All right, excellent.
Mm-hmm. And asked me to take it to Sarah, correct?
I asked you to run it by the higher-ups.
Thank you.
Because you're just an intrepid PA.
Ding.
Intrepid.
Excellent. All right, thank
intrepid.
You.
Intrepid?
It's not intrepid.
Intrepid.
Scotty, please dispel intrepid.
I-N-T-R-A-P-E-D.
No. Intrepide. No, all right. All right, Dave Zinn, that's exactly what I was talking about. Thank you so much. I appreciate it, sir.
Goodbye.
There you go.
And we resolved what?
All right. So, here's the thing. Somehow, though, by the time the message got from Dave Zinn to you to Sarah, all the looking for someone who's interested in quitting smoking had completely been stripped out of the message, and it's that they wanted Sarah to quit smoking. Because I was here when you relayed the message to her, and somehow by the time it got from God's mouth to Dave's ear to you to Sarah, it was, OMSI wants Sarah to quit smoking.
And I think that's what you thought.
Uh-huh.
But what I
thought... I was here when he talked to her.
...is this. I was on the telephone when Dave handed me that message,
uh-huh.
So I kind of half-heartedly heard what he was saying.
I see.
I brought it in. He goes, I think they want to talk to Sarah about coordinating something. That's how I understood
uh-huh.
it. Not that... anybody from the show was going to actually take part in this,
but they just wanted to talk to her.
The fortunate thing is that we do have somebody on the show who's actually expressed interest in quitting smoking.
Now, would that be Sarah? No, Sarah doesn't want to quit smoking. Who might it be, Scotty?
Not sure.
Okay. Don't see you're doing that thing again.
The thing is, I flat out said that I'm back on the smoking program and not quitting.
What does that mean? You're back on the smoking program.
I'm smoking again and going to have to think about quitting someday down the line.
Now, you never told us this. When did that happen?
You had me in here and you go, how's your smoking thing going? And I go, it's not. I'm smoking again.
Now, why are you doing that?
That was like weeks ago.
Why are you smoking again?
Because they're fulfilling and they make you look cool. And I don't know why, actually. It's really stupid. Don't smoke, kids.
So, how old were you when you started smoking, when you started the habit?
Probably about 18, 19.
So you've been smoking for 22 years.
Not straight, but yeah.
Not in a row. Yeah. So you've been smoking for 2 decades.
Probably.
Now, is it that you actively dislike your children? Is it that you want them to grow up in a one-parent household?
Yes.
Is it that you want your parents, is it that you want your children at graduation to have only one set of hands clapping for them?
Or at least they could carry my lung down the aisle.
Do your kids nag you about smoking?
Yes.
What do your kids say to you?
Quit smoking.
And what do you say?
You're disappointing your children?
You just brush them off? When your kids say, Daddy, please don't smoke, do you just laugh and then fire up another one with gusto? What is your response to your children when they ask you to quit smoking?
Typically, it's like, okay, and go grab me another pack off the counter.
See, here's the thing. We're trying to have this discussion with you, and you keep doing this thing where you're trying to be funny.
Okay.
So, seriously, though. I'm just asking, because it never works out. It's like the Heisenberg principle where you can't, like looking at an electron makes it move and therefore you can't see it. Your whole thing of trying to be funny, it never works.
And it's kind of frustrating.
And I think Sarah will concur with me on this, that you're really only fun. Scotty?
That's what's funny about it.
It's not unlike.
It's not funny. Yeah, that's why it's funny.
Scotty, it's not unlike sexual satisfaction. If you focus on it, it's not going to happen. You just got to relax and let it happen naturally, Scotty. Isn't that right?
Yes.
All right. See, there you go. That's what I'm talking about. Okay. So,
we don't ever have a discussion of sexual satisfaction again.
Don't make me get the anal tension reliever.
Oh.
The So now, when you when your kids ask you to quit smoking, what do you say?
I'm seriously considering.
No, no, no. No, you don't say that. When you how old is your youngest kid?
9.
So when you, Daddy, please quit smoking.
I'm working on it, son.
But that's a lie. You're not. So you lie to your children.
I guess. Yes.
Why do you lie to your children?
Because I'm not ready to quit smoking.
You are ready to quit smoking.
Well, I'm halfway there, right?
You're not halfway there. If you're not there at all.
Right. Okay.
So
then that's it.
So why, my question is, so why is it that you do not
quit smoking? Would you like me just to say, son, Daddy's not ready to quit smoking yet. He'll quit when he's good and ready.
But this is an
Get off my back.
This would be really cool. This is a big thing. You know how big Body Worlds is.
This is the Oregon Museum of Science and Industry asking if they can help you quit smoking.
Maybe we can find a listener, right? And we'll follow the listener through their stop smoking situation.
Now, why would you prefer that it be a listener or not?
Because
you?
I'm not ready to quit. And now, why am I not ready to quit?
What
I
is it
tell you.
What is it that's going to make you ready?
I don't know.
Are you glad you're a smoker?
Am I glad about it? No.
Okay, then it sounds like to me like you're ready to quit.
I'll be ready soon.
But that's clearly a lie.
Not tomorrow.
When is the first time you tried to quit smoking?
I've quit on and off. I've gone a year before.
Well, you haven't quit because you're still smoking.
Quitting is
a
binary.
Right.
That's like saying you quit.
I've stopped momentarily.
Okay, that's like saying you quit breathing every time that you don't inhale for a second.
No, that's usually when
you have never quit smoking.
That's usually when I drink too much. I forget to breathe.
When is the first time you tried to quit smoking?
I've probably tried to quit
smoking. No, no, no. When is the first time you tried
to quit?
In
my life?
Yeah.
Like
no, you know, in someone else's life.
I would say, you know, a good 2 years into it.
So and when you were like 21.
Exactly, 21.
So you have
every other year after that, it's like, I try a little
so
bit.
So you have been attempting to quit smoking for 20
Forever.
Years.
Yeah.
For 20 years.
Wow.
Yeah. So,
but I've gone a year before.
Does it stand a reason, then, that you're not very good at it? You're not very good at stopping smoking?
It's all about willpower, and I don't have the willpower to stop because I enjoy it too much.
So
that's the problem. I'm addicted to it.
Does the evidence indicate that that maybe you could use some help?
You can only get help if you want it. Let's put it that way. And I don't want it right now.
That doesn't make any sense.
I'd rather just quit in the eyes of people.
You know, he's not going to do it.
He's just
bumbling around.
I'll just keep killing myself because that's what people think.
Am I going to have to get your kids on
the
show?
You're killing yourself.
Seriously.
Okay, then I guess I'm going to continue.
Am I
going
to have to get your children on the show?
No.
I'm serious. They're out of school. I know they are. I'm trying to help you, Scotty. We're trying to make your life better.
But see, we talked to the wife before, and remember how she seemed a little and she probably...
I do as I am told.
Yeah, what if she doesn't let the children on the show? Because she herself is a smoker as well.
Is she a smoker?
Right. Yeah, and that's made it really hard to quit.
Because
she quit once, I quit once.
Here's the thing.
You know,
I know you think I've been jerky about this, but I really honestly am just trying to get an answer, which is, why will you not accept help smoking? Seriously, what is the actual reason? You keep trying to deflect it by being
honest. There are times when I feel like, all right, I am done, I am ready to quit. And at that moment, had I quit, great, I could have continued it. But right now, I don't feel like it. And
but you
so
feel like it every couple of weeks.
Right, and when I do feel like it, that would be the time to start.
This makes no... Okay.
So here, in other words,
so
right
are you
now,
saying?
I don't feel like quitting. In fact, having a smoke right now sounds awesome.
Yeah, but isn't that always the case, though?
Not always the case.
You could,
maybe you just don't understand addiction, Rick.
Addiction.
If somebody told you to stop drinking coffee,
right?
And you can't really explain why you like it, you just know you feel like
you
physically need it.
Why won't you stop drinking coffee today, Rick? I don't get it. It's kind of like that, but on a much larger scale.
I don't know that they're comparable, though.
It's comparable to heroin addiction.
That's such crap.
I don't believe it.
I don't believe that that's true. There was that big cover story. Did you see the Oregonian on Thursday in like letters that were like 50 points? I said, our video games as addictive as heroin? A new survey says so. You know, some new study. Everything is addictive as heroin. That's right. Like every, no matter what it is they're talking about in the story, everything they talk about
ultimate addiction.
Is as addictive as heroin. That's like the thing they always go to. So, I guess all I'm saying is, does it seem to you like you're really never going to be ready to finally stop?
I would not say never. It's just not today. It's not right now. It's not... it might be tomorrow. I don't know.
So let me ask you this, and then we'll drop it.
One more thing.
Yes.
I'm
going to
be moving soon, hopefully, if my house sells.
Oh, is this the I needed to get me through a stressful period of my life?
No, I wasn't going to say that. I'm just thinking, it would be nice to be done smoking by the time I move. That type
when of thing. When is that?
Well, house has to sell first, so.
I see.
It could be tomorrow.
Let me ask you this.
It could be next year.
Let me ask you this. So then can we all...
conversation going in circles?
Can we all agree? No, it is... It's only going in circles because I feel like you won't cop to it and give like a real answer. Like if you would just at least do the Sarah thing. Sarah
okay, here you go.
That she doesn't want to quit.
I am not ready to quit right now. I do not want to go to OMSI to stop smoking.
Okay, but I guess what I'm asking you is this. Since you said that right now you don't feel like quitting, but you acknowledge that you really aren't able to do it by yourself. So my question is it fair to say that the next time you feel like quitting, it would be a good time to get help?
Yes, okay, I will say that, yes.
All right, so will you agree now in advance, the next time you feel like quitting?
Or next time I want to quit, I will go through it and get some help.
Okay, rather than
putting the patch on.
So in other words, can we agree here that the next time you attempt to quit, you'll let us get external help?
Yes, I will do
Sarah?
That.
Okay, I heard that.
I will do that.
So the next time you attempt to quit smoking, you will let us obtain external help.
Yeah, it could be hypnosis. It could be, you know, whatever it takes.
All right. And
hypnosis sounds like an easy way out.
No.
Some kind of
actually,
program
some people have quit.
Something where you're zapped
hypnosis.
With electricity.
Some
I totally get
quit.
Free hypnotism.
They have quit through that and stayed.
All right.
Done,
and so now, and can we now, but it goes without saying that you have to be honest about it. You can't, like, secretly try to quit.
No, I don't. If I say I'm quitting and I'm done for good and I'm getting help, I'm not going
to
be, like,
no, because, of course,
on the
God knows you wouldn't lie to somebody about your smoking, children. All right.
I smoke.
So the next time you attempt to quit smoking, you will tell us?
Yeah.
And then we will get external help.
It'll be a cry for help, Rick.
See, you were doing
it,
so well.
It's all true,
right.
Though.
All right. Thank you. All right, there you go. Scotty J. Okay, well, let me run through these calls,
hi,
then
Scotty.
We'll break, and we'll come back with Tim Riley and Dennis Pitzenberger. Hi, Rick Emerson Show.
Yeah, hey, Rick.
Hey, what's up?
As a smoker who actually loves their children, I would be willing to go through the OMSI program.
See, that's the thing, is that's what makes it so frustrating. I mentioned something like, hey, OMSI wants to help somebody quit smoking for free. Phones fill up with people who are willing to do it for free. Here, I try to help a coworker, try to help a friend. Yeah, he just spits
on me.
Try
to help him keep his family together.
That's because Scotty doesn't love his children.
No, it's true. It doesn't. He wants them to grow up alone without a male role model, embittered and growing more emasculated by the day as they are raised by a mom.
The entropy PA.
I know. True. All right. Thank you, sir.
That's that.
Bye. Hi, Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, Rick. How you doing?
What's up?
Hey, I haven't called you in about 6 weeks, but I remember I turned on my radio today, and I'm hearing the same story from Scotty J.
No, except between then and now, he apparently tried to quit smoking at one point, but then decided quitting wasn't for him.
But his wife smokes, correct?
Yes, yes, she does.
Does his children smoke?
Well, sort of unintentionally, yeah.
Well, you know what? You know, with his job security and life security, and he has a family, he's got to quit.
Well, so you'd think.
Yeah, all right.
Thank you. Two more, and then we'll break. Hi, Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hello, Rick.
Hi, what's up?
How you doing?
What do you got, brother?
Good, best show ever. Hey, tell Scotty, I was in the same boat he was, and I went to my doctor, and he told me they had a new pill called Shantex that works on receptors in your brain. And I'm telling you what, I forget I smoke for 8-6 hours out of the day. This stuff is great.
And it's like, what is it, like you get it from your doctor or something?
Oh, it's a regimen you take for a month. You take, you know, a certain amount of pills. You can still smoke during the first week on the first day of the second week, you quit or cut down, and you start on another regimen of a milligram, a higher dose.
The best part, though, is how Sarah views all of this as cheating. Like, Sarah wants something where he suffers.
He's like, I'm not willing to do the body world thing, but I'll be hypnotized.
Totally. That's like the, I won't diet, but if you want to make me unconscious and remove all my fat while I sleep. All right.
I tell you, man, this stuff's a miracle. I'm telling you.
What's
there's no
called?
Side effects. I don't have any side effects. Maybe just a little tinge of nausea in the first pill that you take in the morning.
What's it called?
Shantix. It's a brand new drug they got out. It takes the craving away.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
You betcha.
I appreciate it. There you go. This email says, Scotty is traumatizing his children. Look for his daughter to be on the pole within 7 years maximum. Hey, that's from your drink fetcher, by the way, Scotty, so don't go snapping. All right. Take a break here. We'll come back. It's 503-733-2970. Tim Riley, Dennis Pitzenberger, all in the way. Like us at 3, Don't Like us at 7. Don't go anywhere. Carson Show. In just a few, we'll talk to Dennis Pitzenbacher from Miles Around at PDXAutoCollect.com. Like us at 3, Don and Mike at 7. Ladies and gentlemen, at the Ministry of Truth, it's the one and only Tim Riley.
And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
Washington County deputies have arrested a man in the brazen car break-ins in Bethany. In one of the incidents, an entire diaper bag was stolen. Stephen White was arrested late last night during a routine traffic stop. As a matter of fact, he lives not too far from Bethany.
Is there a more appropriate name for a guy arrested at Bethany than Stephen White?
He's also been known as the smoking bandit because people found cigarette butts next to the vehicles that were broken into.
See, Scotty, smoking, the habit of thieves and miscreants.
It's like when they stole my truck, I think the second time, and I found all of those, I mentioned this, I think just empty cigarettes.
Yes.
It's so weird. It was just the filter. It was like you'd taken a cigarette and just very carefully suctioned out all the tobacco. Completely unsmoked, filter, and then the empty paper tube. Very strange.
All right.
Okay. We now finally have details of what it's going to cost you to have one of these iPhones from AT&T. If you're used to paying like $40 a month for basic service, well, get ready for a shock. $60 a month will get you 450 minutes. That's only 450 minutes. $80 will get you 900 minutes. $100 will get you 1,350 minutes. And if you need more minutes, well, your bill could climb to $220 a month. For a whopping 6,000 minutes.
This is the iPhone?
Yeah.
I know if you want to cancel, too. It's, you know, it's the rep. That's actually no different. I think if you want to cancel, it's like $200 or something.
Yeah.
And I think you have to have... And the other weird thing about the iPhone is, I think to use the iPhone, you have to install all the iTunes software in your home computer. I believe that's the case, because I think it has to sync with your home computer, and I think you got to install the iTunes thing.
That sounds like a pain.
It just, I hate stuff
and
like
all
that.
Those minutes are, like, minutes used for, like, even being on the Internet. Are they for playing your iPhone?
Oh, that's separate. The messaging unlimited plan costs an extra $20 a month. The unlimited messaging and media plan, which gives you access to cellular video, costs another $40 a month. Then there's smartphone max, which is an extra $30 a month.
This is your company, the company you defend, Tim Riley. These are your people. All right.
So basically, an affordable option would be, say, a $600 outlay.
Or just standing on the roof and shouting really loudly to somebody. I mean, yeah, I shouldn't be surprised. I mean, again, God love Apple. They're really good at some of what they do, but they are not the choice of the budget conscious. I mean, my wife is on this whole thing about getting a MacBook. And I mean, just look at one of those things. They charge you $100. I mean, it's insane. You just walk into the store and the price tags on those things are just unbelievable. So I'm sure it'll be worth it, though.
Yep.
Stand around in your Dockers and wave at other people with iPhones. I'm sorry. That was a little thought that escaped my head.
Go ahead.
I know. Look, I mean, come Friday.
There's nothing wrong with Dockers.
Come Friday, I'm going to be the big pariah because everybody on Earth is going to be talking about how great it is. And I'll be once again marginalized.
Every rich person on Earth. What normal person can I
get? Yeah, Tim Riley. It's a phone for the man. That's who the iPhone is for. It's an iPhone for the eye oppressor.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't even know what we're doing.
I don't either.
This has been... Is your computer back to working? Is everything over there functioning properly?
Fantastic.
Wonder
240.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the Chris Benoit. Is that what his name is?
No.
Chris Benoit.
Benoit.
Well, the sheriff says he was taking steroids at the time.
There were a lot of prescription medication that he had received from doctors with what we believe to be at this time legal prescriptions.
He did try to contact somebody before his suicide.
He had text messaged a co-worker, and that co-worker received that message several hours after he originally texted. I will not go into the contents of that.
Oh, that's just creepy.
The DA says he was touched by one part of what happened.
I think that's what I'm struck by most through all of this, is that there's a 7-year-old little boy who's dead. And I don't think we'll ever be able to wrap our minds around that completely.
I mean, and the guy, I'm just going to talk about it, because he's just such a dick, obviously. But I mean,
yeah,
and a wife-abusing dick at that. But it's just one of those guys where you just look at him and he was like world famous. I mean, granted, within a certain niche of the entertainment world, but I mean, presumably wealthy.
Screw that guy.
All right.
Well, that's it.
And the whole thing just makes me seem.
Well, there'll be something different
anger.
Tomorrow.
Seriously, there'll be some other hideous story tomorrow.
Yes.
All right.
That's what we're here for. We bring hideousness to life.
That's
what we do. We bring CBS. We bring bad things to life.
All right.
Well, that's enough out of me.
Thanks. Okay. Let's end on a down.
All right. Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show. Ladies and gentlemen, make way for Dennis Pittenberger, Tim Riley, world's greatest newsman, will be back at 4 o'clock today. 4, 5, 6, and 7, all on top of the hour, all the way through Lakers.
Yeah.
All right. Dennis Pittenberger, PDX Autoclick. Hello, sir. How are you?
I'm doing well. Tim, my iMac hasn't broke down either. I don't know about you.
I know. I was doing that live read the other day for 1-800-905-GEEK, and I was talking about something I drew from my own real-life experiences, as they say, was being relatable. Talking about how I had to go on the internet because I don't have Windows XP, and so I had to go on the internet and find some driver, some DLL file, and it took me like half an hour to find and install. And Tim just sort of looked with like this blank, puzzled expression, like had to look at a driver, DLL file, virus. I have no idea what you're talking about. So
it was much like a hunter. He was looking at you as you crawled under the box with a stick holding it up.
Okay,
I never turned mine off. It's just always there and functioning. Nothing ever happens to it.
Are you gonna buy an iPhone, Tim? I know you're a big
one. I'm on a radio man salary, so yeah. Probably not at the moment.
No, it's one of those things. It's the way that Apple stuff always works. It'll be it's like singular only, I think, for the first 6 months.
Yeah.
I think if you're on like Verizon thing, I don't think you can even get it.
No.
Which is the only saving grace. It means my wife can't buy one. Because I know that she was totally God love her. She's one of the smartest people I know, but boy, she gets sucked in by marketing campaigns for certain types of items. I mean, certain advertising campaigns, it literally is like just waving the bright, shiny object. You know what I mean? All right. Let's see. You used to be a smoker, didn't you?
I didn't get this voice from... I'm not a radio guy. I mean, at all.
Now, do you still smoke?
No, God,
all right.
No.
All right. Ian, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Oh, hi, Rick. How's it going?
What's up?
A little advice on how to help Scotty J quit smoking.
Yes.
Well, obviously, you like him a lot. All of you guys care very much for him.
Uh-huh.
This is something that a friend of mine tried, and it was very successful. What you do is you take Scotty J's pack of smokes, and you do something with them. He doesn't know what, and he doesn't know how often.
No.
Would you want to smoke a cigarette if maybe...
No. Yeah. All right, let's not refer to the inserting of cigarettes into a delicate portion of my anatomy.
Or he could come over and stay at my house. My wife, when I was still smoking, let me say she's a very passionate Latin woman.
Is this going to be something else that I have to bleep?
No, okay. Not at all.
All right.
She would jump on top of me and break the cigarettes apart and shove them into my mouth.
All right.
Yeah, that was scary. But it works.
So Scotty should come over and let your wife jump on him.
And cram cigarettes into his mouth. No. And, he will not really want to smoke after that because it would just be bad memories.
Thank you for the advice, sir.
No problem.
There you go. All right.
I would have a little bit different advice for Scotty than that.
I know, and to be fair, let me read this email because I'm getting it. I don't know, people think I'm just being a jerk and ganging up because I got this. This email is from Bob, and the subject line of this email is, "Stop being such a dick." Quitting smoking is unbelievably difficult. You have no idea, so shut your hole. And then Bob continues to say, "I had a serious cocaine habit that was easier to break than smoking. You don't have an effing clue, so shut it," says Bob. No, I'm the first to admit that. I am absolutely the first to admit. Smoking is clearly very difficult. I mean, look at that guy. He's been trying to quit for 20 years. And I am the first to admit that I am unbelievably glad that I never started smoking.
You can tell when Scotty talks about it. This is the deal with Scotty. Scotty's not ready to quit smoking. You have to mentally be ready to quit smoking before you're ever going to be told, prompted, made fun of, or basically bludgeoned about the head with words that you're going to quit smoking. No one could do that for you. It would be as easy as saying, "Rick, stop using your computer. Put your MP3 player, your cell phone, your computer, put it on a box, don't touch it." It's not going to happen. You'd freak out. You'd explode. You would completely melt down because of the way that you're wired into the world.
I think there's a difference, though. Here's the difference. I mean, I'm not trying to be confrontational about it because, again, I understand that he's the one who is addicted to something, and I'm not, so it's all very easy for me to sit here and go, "Let me just tell you, Scotty. Let me..." Because it's all easy to the guy who doesn't have to do it. Well, I understand.
Sure.
I understand that. By the same token, stopping drinking coffee or stopping using the computer or whatever, something people are trying to use as an analogy, I think it's different because he's already tried to quit
like 50 times.
Well, there's
like,
a
clearly he does. Like, I've never tried to quit coffee because, again, I honestly, literally have no desire to quit drinking coffee. He clearly does want to quit, though, because he's tried.
He says he's not ready. Like, he makes reference to a future point when he is going to be ready.
Yeah. And that's my point, is you have to mentally be ready to quit smoking. I was at a point in my life where I'd smoked for 16 years. It was time for me to smoke. That and coughing up things that I couldn't recognize.
Right.
I mean, it was like, it was, and there's a point where some people, it just affects people's bodies different and people's minds different and where they are in life. Now, he, where you actually are well-deserved in giving him a hard time is the fact that he has a family. I had quit smoking before I got married and had a family. Scotty, on the other hand, that's the one part that I will kind of twist the knife and help you do that is, you know, I mean, come on, he's married, kids, it's you know, stop.
It's okay.
Take up bourbon or something.
Maybe the new daddy can clap at their graduation.
I mean, you just, all he's going to end up doing is sounding like an extra out of a video game.
When they're living in a group home. What?
He's going to end up just sounding like an extra out of a video game.
Totally. You have 10 seconds to comply. Steve, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello, sir.
Good afternoon, sir. How are you doing?
What's up, brother?
Hey, I just would like to leave on a happy note for you today.
Yes, sir.
First of all, love the show. I've been listening for quite a while and would just like to say that I brought into the world a brand new song today, 7 pounds, 5 ounces.
Oh, this was your own, not someone else's.
Yeah.
Okay. Just checking. Just checking. Congratulations.
Congratulations.
Well, thank you all. And once again, love the show. Keep it going. And you make my day worthwhile.
Excellent. What did you name it?
I named him Hunter.
Hunter. Ed, now, is that after Hunter Thompson?
Nope. Just the name that I've always liked. And my first one, I always wanted my... This is our second. And first one is Austin, and I always want to name second one Hunter.
Austin and Hunter. What are they going to be, like bounty? Bounty? Totally. They're going to be like forest rangers with huge knives on their belts when they grow up. All right. Well, congratulations, sir.
Turn out all right.
Well, congratulations, and thank you for listening, my friend.
Thank you, sir.
Right,
Austin and Hunter. That's a
seriously.
Couple of kids. Those are kids. When they're in high school.
With them.
Oh, no. Those are the kind of kids that, you know, one picks you up after you puke. Then you puke in Austin's lap. You puke in Hunter's truck. And they still take care of you because that's the kind of guys. They're guys' guys.
Totally. I was just going to. Hello, Betty. You want me to come pick you up in my Jeep Cherokee after school today?
Yeah, totally. I've got to go do some rappelling.
Totally. I have to go climb Devil's Tower. Let's go to the game afterwards and have ice cream. All right, that's totally an all-American manly guy.
See, I have thought
get a soda.
I'm kind of Brandy and I are on the 99 percentile that we are one and done. But if we had another and it was a boy, have to be Jake. Jake is the, you know, just something about Jake.
Now, when you say that you and Brandy are 99% sure. That sounds like you're 100% sure and she's like 98 and
no,
so it balances out.
I think that we're both probably 99. You know, it's like we talked to people. We went to the Children's Museum and talked to somebody this weekend that had a baby 8 years after their one and done baby. So, you know, you never say never. You might pick, you know, you never say never, Rick. You might pick up smoking next week.
Maybe. I've been tempted. I will say this. No,
I can't ever see. No, I could see you being a smoker.
I've never even done cigars or anything.
No.
Really?
No, it's just not me. No, I just don't. I would never
see it on you either.
You have everything else. Like, I'm actually surprised you haven't picked up smoking, considering all the time you spent, like, coffee shops and greasy diners.
Totally. Well, that's the thing.
And, like, and Joni is a chimney.
Totally. No, it's true.
So she's totally comfortable with it.
Well, in a way, you really are a smoker.
Well, you know, Joni says the thing. She says, yeah, I really am an honorary smoker. She says the thing that is very telling. She says she doesn't want to quit, but she wishes that she hadn't started.
Oh,
and I said, well, what do you mean? And she said, if you told me right now I couldn't smoke for the rest of my life, she said, I hate that idea. She said, I hate the idea that I would have to, having done it and been addicted, the idea that I would have to go the rest of my life and never smoke again. She's like, I can't hack that. So
it's been years for me. I trigger once a week. Nice. I full-on trigger bad day stress. You know, baby's crying because Elmo's not on the TV. Whatever. The car won't start.
I want a cigarette.
And I just, you know, and you know what? If I see that and being like your wife, I see marketing everywhere.
Yeah.
I see the guy, you know, I'll take a relaxing puff off this. You know.
I mean, well, coming from a small, trashy town like I do, I really ought to be a smoker. You know?
Were your parents smokers?
My dad was. My dad smoked like 4 or 5 packs a day.
A lot of people whose parents were like active, like very active smokers, don't smoke.
Tim and I were talking about that same thing. Tim said, his dad smoked tons, and that contributed to his passing away early. My dad
every morning, like hacking up into the toilet. My grandmother, you'd visit her house, there was a living room chair, and the ceiling was black right overhead. You know, I think
well,
I
went against the grain, because you don't end up being a drinker
like a scared
or a smoker.
Straight thing, yeah. All right, we'll do this, come back, talk more to Dennis on the other side. Like us at 3, Donna Mike at 7. He said it's the Rick Emerson Show.
In the pictures, he could feel the nice breeze. We could drive through the city, no doubt, but don't say my car's topless. Say the newness, here's the anthem, put your hands up.
So disgusting.
Complete chemical overload.
Would you like chew between cigarettes?
Oh, I
like
would
to sort of clear out your throat between cigarettes. Hand me some of that Skoal.
No, it was Kodiak. Okay. But, I mean, literally, I would smoke a pack and a half a day, and when I couldn't smoke, I mean, it was literally like, imagine, I've been in sales for years, and I was smoking when I was in sales. So it was like I would smoke on the way from the office door
but
to the car.
Some place where you couldn't smoke, you would chew.
The minute I got in the car, big three-finger dip of Kodiak. Chew all the way to my client, grab a cigarette, smoke in between like my car and the door.
And while wearing the patch.
Oh, totally. Yeah. Couple of those.
Squeezing the Kodiak out for your soda.
Well, I can say when I quit smoking, I went to that hot spring. I don't want to name them or whatever. It's up past Bridge of the Gods.
Right.
And I did this thing where you did this bath and wrap. I've told the story to everyone that ever wants to quit. And they do this thing where you do this chemical or this mineral water bath. And then right. They wrap you.
Oh, I remember when you did this.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, and then I did that. And you're like in this wrap for like 3 hours. And the thing is, I had just come back from like a two-week bender in Montana with all my redneck buddies. So you can imagine like the whiskey and the booze and the cigarettes and everything. And when they peeled that sheet off of me, I'm not kidding you. I'm holding in my hand one of these, what do you call it? Like a
legal pad.
That's the color of the sheet.
Oh, yeah.
That came out, and it was like a template.
So gross.
And I have not touched a cigarette since.
I remember my dad would try to quit every now and again, and it was so gross. He'd try to quit, and he would detox or you know whatever withdrawal, and he actually would sweat, and his sweat would have like a tobacco, like sheen to it. Yeah. It was so gross.
I coughed worse for a year after I quit. Than when I was smoking, because it was like all the gum.
Well, because it all loosens up, doesn't it?
Yeah. It all comes loose. Well, let's quickly get this. Hello,
hey,
you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, guys.
Hey.
Comparing caffeine addictions and video game addictions to smoking isn't really too fair, because smoking, it'll kill you. Caffeine, probably not.
Yeah, for good or bad, I'm in no position to compare anything I do to smoking.
Yeah, you know, I smoked for like 15 years, and I quit. And I just quit my job, just quit smoking. I was in the middle of a divorce, and I used Wellbutrin, man. I didn't care about anything.
Isn't Wellbutrin that stuff that, like, and that's an antidepressant, yeah, but it also helps you quit, like, whatever.
Yeah, and it worked great. I mean, I didn't care. I haven't smoked since. It's been like 8 years.
All right. Cool. Thank you, sir.
Well, that could be an idea. Right. We get a bottle of Wellbutrin and just start spiking.
Well, it's like they can give you that. Like, if you want to quit drinking, they'll give you that Anabuse stuff.
Yeah.
Or, like, if you try to drink, you just hurl everywhere.
I knew a guy that was on Anabuse because he had, like, 7 drunk driving tickets. He would actually drink that stuff, puke it, and go drink.
Fantastic.
Oh, my God.
So Keith Moon did.
Yeah, totally.
And then he overdosed on the drug that, on Anabuse. He overdosed on the drug that was helping to get out booze. What's coming up on Miles Around?
Well, the regular stuff. We're going to do a couple in the driver's seats, a couple small sport utilities, a little Kia Sportage, and a little Mercury Mariner, the new SUV from Mercury. And, you know, the funny thing is, a lot of people may not say it is applicable to Portland, but national gas averages are now below $3. So yeah. There's something on the horizon to be happy about with $3.50 gas in your backyard.
All right, so we can all go back to driving huge behemoth cars.
Well, maybe not that. But then we do have, like everything else, we have a race party on the 7th. At the Cheerful Piss Up, our little NASCAR viewing party. And if you want to, there is some information I'm going to get up in the next couple of days on the website. It's milesaround.com. We're going to have a big show and shine get-together. It's on the 21st of July. So that's going to be our first actual outdoor remote deal for the Solid State Radio Studio.
Excellent. So find out more. Go to pdxautoclick.com, by the way, next time you're looking for an automobile. And
Drudge report of car listings.
Excellent. And Dennis Spitzenberger hosts Miles Around Saturdays, 9 to 11, preceded by Car and Driver Radio. And don't forget, speaking of 7, don't forget 7707, Vanilla Ice at Outlaws, presented by AM970. More on that as the days unfold.
I'm gonna stop.
Are we having the Bullet Boys on tomorrow, too?
We are. Bullet Boys in studio tomorrow.
I'm going to stop, collaborate, and listen.
All at once.
Well, in that order.
We want to thank CNN Radio correspondents Jim Roop, Lisa Goddard, and Amanda Moyer. Rick Emerson Show, produced today and every day by the lovely and haunted Sarah X. Dillon for AM970, Solid State Radio. In the newsroom, Tim Riley, PA, Scotty J. Dave Zins, the gatekeeper. See y'all tomorrow. Like us next. Don't let the bastards grind you down. Watch out for snakes. Oh, for the love of... with the...